Good evening, everyone. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Tuesday, November 12, 2024, City Council meeting. I will ask the city clerk to establish a quorum and do a roll call.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Barton.
Here.
Councilmember Edwards.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Landrum.
Here.
And Mayor Wixom.
Here. If you, I could ask our utility manager, Damaris Hansen, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and I should have said Acting Public Works Director. Reports this evening. Mr. Neumeier, closed session report.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. No closed session items to report out tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeier. We'll move on to Mayor, Councilmember reports, announcements, and presentations. I'll kick it off. Thank you, everyone who came out. I know Linda Winters was working the elections, and many other people in our community volunteered. I think we're all happy to see it behind us. And from my own behalf, I want to thank the community for the support. And I look forward to serving the next 2 years. And we will be excited to see you in the chambers at our next meeting on December 10th, where we will be celebrating our two outgoing council members and celebrating our two new incoming council members that are both here in the audience this evening. Since last month, we had several things going on. The chamber had a shop, sip, and stroll, which was extremely well attended, and I was always glad to participate in that. I attended the Central Coast Economic Forecast at Madonna Inn. It was very well attended, and basically, I left knowing the same thing I walked in with. We're doing good. Participated in a roundtable with the Government Affairs Committee of the Chamber last week, and I want to share that this Thursday, KSBY will be at Morro Bay Fire Department for Season of Hope. They will be there 4 o'clock. Well, they'll be there from 4 to 7, but 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and then 6 to 7 is televised. So I would like to encourage everyone to stop by, drop off toys, which you can do whether they're there or not, canned food, donations for the toy drive or the food bank. So please stop by. Chief McCrane and the crew will all be there. Tomorrow I'll be attending the last meeting of the year for Air Pollution Control District, APCD, so I will report back on that next month with you all. And a reminder that December 6th is our Christmas tree lighting. December 7th is our boat parade. And I do have a World of Remembrance Day that is being sponsored by San Luis, by SLOCOG on Sunday, November 17th from 12 to 1:30. It's an annual event honoring road traffic victims and supporting affected families and promoting road safety awareness. The event program is from 12 to 1:30. There's a memorial, a reception, and this is in front of the San Luis County Courthouse Annex at 1050 Monterey Street. So again, that's Sunday, November 17th from 12 to 1:30. This flyer will be in the back of the room when we take a break, so if anyone is interested in attending, I'm sure that they would be glad to have you there. I will stop with that and pass it down to Councilmember Barton.
Well, I didn't have quite as busy a couple of weeks there as you did, but I attended two meetings. One is the Water Resources Authority, always a fascinating meeting, talking about water in the county and where we're going with that and who's got it, who doesn't. It's always an interesting meeting. And then I attended a meeting I'm just reading along on my calendar. I'm just delighted to be feeling the new feeling fall and the different light and the beautiful skies, and just nice to be in this time of the year.
I have no reports.
Thank you. Councilmember Edwards.
Thank you, Mayor. I just kind of want to piggyback off of a couple things that you said. I just feel like I'm much more wanting to speak from an emotive level, and I'm just so happy that we have some clarity. It's nice to have gotten through the other side of the federal election, the local election, and to just have some answers. You know, normally I'm somebody that's comfortable functioning in the gray area, and as I've found myself longer in this position, black and white seems to get a little bit easier with yeses and nos. And so I just want to say that I feel like this community can have a moment to take a breath and breathe a minute and take in the holidays with friends and family, and enjoy a lot of the community events, many of the ones that you mentioned, Mayor. So, I just really appreciate where we are and a lot of the things that we've done as a community over this past 2 years and most recently. I think we should all be proud of each other.
Thank you. Councilmember Ford.
I think that we're all having like moments of reflection here, and I'll speak more about my reflection in our next meeting. But I just want to say that, you know, this is my last like full meeting. And so it's been a pleasure serving our city, and for almost, it'll be short of 4 years because I did come in under different circumstances, but it's really been a pleasure. So for those of you who don't tune in or don't attend our special meeting on the 10th of December, I just want to say thank you for your participation and for all that everyone does in this community, including our staff and our council members and our mayor. And I'll stop there because I could keep going, but just want to say thank you. There was a lot going on between daylight savings, the election, Halloween, and all these different things. I have to say, the witch's paddle, that's always fun to see, you know, all those types of things, because there are moments when people are, you know, emotional about all different things. Like, it's always fun to see communities come together for those types of events. And I will leave it there.
Thank you. Yes, the witch's paddle and the downtown trick-or-treating event put on by the chamber and the downtown merchants and the recreation department was phenomenal. Extremely well attended. What a great weekend. Great weekend. And there are other events. I would encourage everyone to check the rec department's schedule. There's breakfast with Santa and some other events that are great to take your kids and grandkids. City manager report, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Wanted to let everybody know that I attended the League of Cities conference a few weeks ago, and it was informative conference. I have prepared a report, and I intend to include my report in perhaps one of the packets so that everybody can see what took place there. And also, I myself has been away for a while, and while I'm away, a lot of exciting events had happened, and I missed them all. And but first, most of all, I want to thank everybody for holding down the fort and get everything, get our services operated without a beat. And so I just really appreciate council, my staff, and the citizens for just coming together. With that, I'm going to let the acting public works director to give a few updates on some important projects that are taking place in our city.
Thank you, City Manager Kimball. So, yeah, I just have a few projects in public works that we've been working on. One of them is the pavement rehab project. Suez is under construction under contract with them. They have started to begin the crack sealing, and then the paving dig outs to repair the failed areas will start late next week in November. with the final slurry and Cape Seal coming after that probably early January. That one's a little bit weather dependent, so we'll see how long until that one's done. They're scheduled right now to be done by the end of February. We will be sending out notices through Nextdoor and Facebook, city website, and door hangers before the slurrying starts so that people can know where they can park and when they can drive on the new paved roads. And then also we have a sewer main lift station force main project. So that's the force main that goes underneath the highway. As some of you may remember, back in April of 2022, that force main broke. We had to do an emergency repair in that about that same week. So now we have Hartzell Construction out there helping with the permanent pipeline repair. So they do a horizontal drilling under the highway so there's no disruption of Highway 1. And then they connect it out there in Main Street. So they've done that portion of it. They've connected in Main Street. They'll come back and pave that section of Main Street. And then in the following week, they will connect it back to the lip station here pretty soon. There is a slight change in the bike path tour. There's a detour to take you around the bike path, so they take you through cloisters there to avoid their construction area. Astound Fiber Optic, who's installing all the fiber optic throughout the town, they are almost complete. I know that's been a little bit of a disruption for the town. So they are about 50% of the way through the cloisters property. And then once they're done there, they go back and they've got to permanently pave all of the areas, the boring areas that they opened up. They have them like temporary paved right now. State water shutdown is the next update. So state water shutdown started October 28th and was supposed to come back today. Unfortunately, it is not coming back today. We were notified this morning that it won't be back today. So I talked with CCWA about getting us some water in the meantime. They have some stored water that they can provide. And that helps us so we're not rescheduling our staff to work over the weekend and at night. So we get that water and it'll allow us to not have that extra staffing. And so state water is supposed to be coming back on Monday. They had some delays, so hopefully that does. And some other good news, the storm drain at Sequoia has been completed. There's a lining of a storm drain, and that project's complete. And we're bringing the notice of completion to council in December. I think that's it for my updates.
Thank you. Anything else, City Manager Kimball?
That'll conclude the
Thank
report,
you.
Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Hansen, can I ask one quick question on Astound? You said they'd be going back once they're done and repaving the areas they did. What about, I noticed and I had someone ask over by the cloisters area, there's a dig out in the sidewalks where they put asphalt. Are they going to put concrete back there?
They will be. That's just like a cold patch that
okay.
they do for now.
Okay. So thank you for
There's some of those and then there's some other, we'll come back and get all
Thank
of
you. That. Appreciate that. excuse me, subcommittee reports. Did you have anything else with the Damaris, with the Ms. Hansen, with the water reclamation facility, or
no?
That's it. The water reclamation. Anything else with that? Yeah. No. Okay. Thank you. Before I pass you up, Mr. Singwald. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Erlen Singwald, Community Development Director. So, I do have an update on the Vistra project. So, on October 28th, Vistra sent the city a letter putting their battery energy storage application with the city on pause and notifying us of their intent to apply under the state AB 205 opt-in certification program after the end of the year. That letter is posted on the Community Development Department's website on our BEST webpage. And I'm available to answer any questions or provide more detail.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions from the updates? No? With that, then we will move on to recognitions and presentations. And this evening we have the Morro Bay Police Explorer Post 43. And I'm going to turn it over to Chief Watkins.
Thank you, Mayor Wixom and Council. I am very excited. You guys go ahead and stand on up so that we can see you coming up to the front here. So I'll make some introductions from your left to right. We have Tony Medina, Jacob Vasquez, Victor Perez, and then Senior Officer Jason Taw. And Commander Mosqueda's over there taking some photos, and we also have Sergeant Stewart in the back of the room. But I'm extremely excited to introduce and recognize these gentlemen this evening because they have, these gentlemen make up our Explore Post, soon to be public safety cadets. But our Explore Post is a part of the Boy Scouts of America, and they are mentored, organized, and fall under the umbrella of the Morro Bay Police Department. Our officers, Senior Officer Jason Taw, Senior Officer Art Vasquez, are two of our main mentors, advisors to this group, and they have worked tirelessly, certainly over the last several years, but this past year, they have been here. Isaac Perry is not here tonight with us. He is the fourth member of our Explore Post. Along with the advisors and other many other officers of the Morro Bay Police Department, these guys work tirelessly throughout the year to work in this community. They volunteer. They are a volunteer group. You will see them out and about in the community at times, parking vehicles, attending special functions, all of our Morro Bay events. They are there to hand out Morro Bay Police Department information and items to the community, but they are an excellent representation of what dedication and hard work can do to help develop our young adults into very qualified and dedicated adults for the future. So this evening, what we want to do is recognize their efforts. They just had a Explore Post competition on October 26th. And these explorers competed in the Central Coast Explore competition held at Cuesta College. There were 16 posts competing in six different disciplines. And these gentlemen have been working hard. It's a part of their training and curriculum. These individuals meet every Thursday night for 2 hours, and they come together and train in areas such as radio operation, officer safety, mental health response, criminal law, U.S. Constitution. They go through some traffic stops, high-risk traffic stops, crisis negotiation, first aid medical training, and some traffic control, crowd control, just to name a few. During this Cuesta competition, the Central Coast Explore competition, the disciplines that they competed in was crisis negotiation, crime scene investigation, which these explorers received second place in both of those. They also do a domestic violence scenario, a suspicious person scenario. They have active shooter, high-risk traffic stop, domestic violence, some obstacle course. But so out of those six disciplines, 16 different Explore Posts competed. And we're talking about Explore Posts from San Diego, Sacramento, CHP, Visalia, large agencies that have multiple explorers that attend and are able to kind of intermingle between what their strengths are. We have four highly talented, very dedicated explorers that not only serve the community, but work very hard for themselves to really develop themselves into service-minded and good character human beings. And I am just so incredibly proud of these individuals, and I wanted to have them come in front of you and be recognized by you, but also our community, because it's not just the competitions. These guys are in our community pretty much every weekend, sometimes multiple times a month. So one of the things that I see Jacob is in his uniform. One thing about our explorers, not all of these individuals are going to become law enforcement. That's not necessarily the goal. If they want to do that, this is an excellent path for them to do that. But this is resume building. As you can see, Jacob is in his community service officer uniform because he works full-time for the Morro Bay Police Department as a community service officer and has come up through the Explore Post to get that kind of resume and familiarity with what we do in law enforcement. I'd hire every single one of these guys. As a matter of fact, Miguel Salgado is just about to complete. He was a community service officer. Prior to that, he was an explorer, and he's just about to complete his six-month academy, law enforcement academy. So we'll be seeing him out on the streets very soon as a law enforcement officer. So really, much appreciation and applause for what these explorers do, and also their mentor that's standing with them tonight, certainly Commander Mosqueda and Sergeant Stewart. They put a lot of time, a lot of effort into these individuals, and it is just a wonderful thing to see these guys develop over the years. It's truly a lot of fun. So thank you for allowing us to come and present these awards to you, and congratulations to our Explore Post.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you all. I would have to share that I was near an incident last week, and can't say how proud I am to represent this community with the police and fire department. They are just class act all the way. So thank you, guys. I see fire back there. I see police back there. Thank you. With that, we are going to open public comment. I have three speaker slips to start out with. And we'll start on a good note, and I'm going to invite Linda Winters first, and then Lawrence McNally, followed by Kieran.
Always a good place to start. Always a good place to start, yes.
Thanks. It's nice to be known as a good note. And I'm sitting in good company back there. Wow, it's kind of special. I'm going to start out with Halloween. I sent the most magnificent note to Parks and Rec for the arrangement of the downtown street fair. I didn't get to see the witch's paddle because we passed out over 1,000 treats to all of these children that came through, families galore. And kudos to the parents that the kids came by and we tried to give them a second treat and they said, oh no, we already got one. That was so wonderful. And I want to say congratulations very much to all of the new members and all the really, I can't say this with a straight face, with hard fought battles to attain your new seats in the city council. Okay, congrats, guys. That was really wonderful. And thank you to all of you who have served on the council. It's a lot of work and a lot of commitment, not always appreciated by the public, but I've always appreciated all of you guys. And a special, special, huge gratitude to each and every Morro Bay citizen, all of the registered voters. I've been saying 7,980, but I saw today that there's actually 8,200 registered voters here in Morro Bay. That is incredible. And those of you who expressed your opinions through their individual votes, it was a record turnout. Now, I only have one more thing to talk about. Thanksgiving dinner, the community dinner at the community center on November 28th. The Lions Club, and I don't know if you put that picture up or not. Okay, Dana. The Lions Club is inviting Morro Bay residents to do one of two things as far as Thanksgiving is concerned. Number one, if you wish to have your dinners delivered to your home and share with your neighbors, I want you to call the senior center, the 24/7 message center at 805-772-4421 and make your reservation for that dinner, and it'll be delivered to your home. And those police explorers are some of the ones that help to deliver it. And do that as soon as possible, because believe it or not, it's not that far away. Or you can come to the community center to pick up your meals by car or walk up, and it will not start, that second meal delivery will not start until 1 p.m. No exceptions to the rule. They put me in charge of being a guard on that thing. And at 12:30 at the community center parking lot, the Lions Club will have their semi-annual car giveaway. Please come to support our wonderful event, and I'm looking forward to seeing all of you for Thanksgiving. Thank you very much.
I had three names. Next up is Larry McNally, and then Kieran, and followed by that is Gary Johnson. So if you guys can be ready to come up, thank you. Yes, please.
Once in a while, show up. I'd like to say hi to Carla. I grew up with her in San Ynez. So that's only the second time I've seen her in probably a long, long time. I ride a bike a lot here, a lot. I've lived here for 25 years, and I think the power plant idea is a wonderful idea. I just have, lately, I ride a bike a lot, but I've been diagnosed with COPD, and I have concerns about fire with regard to the batteries. And I think I can speak for a lot of my friends that I've lived here a long time ago. I think that's been my utmost concern about if and when a fire should occur, because from what my understanding is that it's not a matter of if, but when. And being so close to the city, with the constant onshore breeze, it seems it's highly tenuous that something, you know, could go sideways. And somebody like me, closing in on 70 years old with COPD, I have a pretty good concern with that. And I would hope in the future, as you go through with the planning, that things like that would be addressed, and so that we could read about those concerns in the future as you go through with your proceedings with that issue. And I guess that's all I really wanted to say for now.
Thank you. Hey, whatever they say we are, we are. In light of the recent successes of decades of bipartisan efforts to mainstream fascism at the local and national levels, let us examine some of the dangers that stalk the streets of Morro Bay. Am I not going to get my, Ooh, I need the clicker, don't I? Series of images. I've never actually emailed you guys anything before. Although I do now feel obliged to apologize. I actually almost came in and asked you guys how to do this to make sure we did it right. Perhaps I should have. Oh.
You're welcome to continue with waiting, so.
I'll have to rush through the images. Thank you. Well, whatever. The more power somebody has, the less accountable they are by the very nature of power. For the police, increased accountability directly impacts their ability to do their job. Their job being to maintain the status quo, which demands that some people suffer grave inhumanities in order to provide for the pleasure of their betters. If you're not willing to serve, you have no right to comfort and safety. We're told our rights are inalienable, but if we were presumed innocent until proven guilty, there would be no pretrial detention. Now, let's see, that's good. All right. Sometimes, not all the time, just sometimes, I like to run a quick Boolean search on new officers. The Morro Bay Police Department, as you can see in the image that just went by, has absolutely no entries on Brady's list and is listed as being not in compliance with state law. This entry on a cop block website discusses one of our more recent officers by the name of Marfia, who was promoted to sergeant in San Jose after repeated complaints regarding excessive use of force, including forcibly aborting a lady's fetus. As for the rest of it, if you want to just Roll it. People want to look at that. They can go on YouTube and look at it later. Google it if you like. There we go. And you stop there for a moment. Psalm 5, verse 8 through 12. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make thy way straight before my face, for there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. They flatter them with their tongue. Destroy thou them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against thee. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because thou defendest them. Them that love thy name be joyful in thee. Back in August, I snapped this photo of the inside of the MBPD Community Services Cruiser. The officer's vest can clearly be seen in the passenger seat. If you want to scroll to the next one, of note here is the patch on the right breast. Protect those who serve. 5-11 Tactical. Pictured are the wings, shield, and sword of Saint Michael, Archangel, and Savior of Israel. Also, patron saint of the military, police, and chivalry. Somebody needs to tell Mr. Vasquez that hiding your naughties after you've noticed the cop watcher is too little, too late.
Gary, followed by Joe Yukich.
Okay, I want to thank the mayor, city council, and the police department, fire department, the police of Morro Bay. I am looking forward to 2025. We've got a great menu coming up. I can feel it. But mainly I'm here to say thank you, citizens of Morro Bay, for coming together as a team and overwhelmingly passed A24. That's the start. Well, we cannot have done that without Barry Brennan and the team effort. There were dozens of people on the streets getting signatures, and after that, they had to go to Spencer's and door-to-door. I'm so proud of these people, and I'm so proud of the city of Morro Bay. I think it's great. I don't know what's going to happen next. I know Vestra's headed for Sacramento. Federal government's trying to come down there. We got a somebody from New York that donated $80,000 to defeat Yes on 24. But we're going to persevere. Excuse me. We're going to make it. We're going to make it as a community. We have to. We have to do that. We got to show how many happens in California with those four facilities that had to be evacuated because of problems with the with the storage facilities, lithium ion storage facilities. So we got to keep our hearts and go forward. And I want to also thank Happy Holidays. Are we going to have another meeting in November? Is December closed?
December.
December's closed. We'll have another meeting. Okay. So on good thoughts, hey, have the rest of the evening and Happy New Year and New Year's, all that other stuff. Bye.
Joe, you're up, and I have no speaker slips after that, so public comment is open to everyone. You did not need to fill a speaker slip out to speak this evening. Thank you.
Madam Chair, we do have one person on Zoom raising their hand.
Thank you.
Good evening. Go Hoyas. I wasn't even going to speak, but this guy, I've listened to him every time. I don't know how you sit through this. I just want to commend the Morro Bay Police Department after what he said, that we've had multiple incidents at times out at Manfredo Square, and they're always quick to respond. She's done a great job. They're a wonderful department. I'm not going to go through biblical passages. But last time I was here, this gentleman accused the Morro Bay Police Department by being trained by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. Happening. So I just wanted to commend them. They do a great job. I just don't like the fact you have to go through this. And secondly, I'd like to talk about the Panorama Project. Tony Garcia, who lives on Java near me, is a geologist at Cal Poly. He's a professor, and he gave a really good speech a couple of days ago talking about the potential for slides up there. And he made a comment that this was approved by the civil engineer, I believe, who did the work for the city, and he doubts a lot of those things on there. 42 homes up there could be a potential problem, and I just want to voice that. There's fervent opposition up on that side of the hill, and I just want to make you aware. It is a slide potential. I would like to see Tony Garcia. He's a top-quality guy, professor at Cal Poly in geology. He studied the La Conchita slide, and he gave a lot of comment on it. And I would like at least the city potentially to engage him to discuss this matter. So I stand in opposition. And you know what? The panorama, 42 homes, I own a shopping center. It's going to mean more haircuts for my barbers. It's going to mean, you know, more plumbing jobs. It's going to mean a lot of things for Tom Hay, the printer. But overall, you know, I come between here and Los Angeles at least three or four times a week, and I have to pass La Conchita, and I see that slide every time I pass it and all those crosses on that hill. I just don't want that to happen here, and we have to really study this very hard before moving forward. Thank you.
I do have one more speaker slip from Dana Lindquist, Morbay Chamber. Thank you.
Good evening, council members, mayor, city department heads. On behalf of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce and over 300 members, I wanted to thank the community and the business leaders for supporting our shop sip and stroll last Friday. It was quite a success. As we've all discussed, the holidays are upon us, and that was a great way to kick it off. Everyone seemed to have a great time. We have our chamber mixer tomorrow night. I'd encourage everyone to attend. Absolution Cellars will be hosting it. It's a great way for businesses to partner and network amongst one another. It's a free event for the community and any businesses. We have Breakfast on the Bay November 20th, next Wednesday at the Community Center. It starts bright and early at 7:30 in the morning and it goes till 9 o'clock. It's again another holiday theme. It's Holiday of Hope. We'll be showcasing nonprofit organizations and the impact of giving as we embark on the holiday season. I just want to remind everyone that the Chamber is here to advocate on behalf of the business community with our local government by engaging in economic development and assisting businesses with navigating the city government if they need it, by partnership, by having different events such as the mixer that we'll be having tomorrow night and connecting them with like-minded businesses. We're a resource for our businesses as well. We have many sites in the region that a business may need from time to time on our website, or any of our staff members are there to assist any business should they have any questions or needs in regards to their business. We have Breakfast on the Bay. It usually covers a lot of great topics as well throughout the year. And then we'll have, we also have the Shop, Sip, and Stroll that I mentioned, which is a great community event and a great way for our businesses to engage with the community as well. Thank you very much.
No more speaker slips. Public comment is open.
Madam Chair, we do have one person on Zoom who's raised her hand.
Thank you. I'll get them at the end. Thank you.
Good evening, Bill Martini. I wanted to kind of follow up on the Vistra, the battery plant, and I've always said I'm not against the battery plant. It's just strictly the location, and I didn't know if there's, now that they're going to go to Sacramento, if there's a chance of talking to Vistra as far as a different location, because I do believe that the Coastal Commission is going to probably not allow it, you know, in the floodplain and that. And the thought again is to push them to see if they'd be interested in city property, you know, like out by the wastewater treatment plant where it's totally usable, but it's outside of the city's hub. And the reason I bring this up is I grew up down in, on a ranch down in Southern Cal in San Diego County. My nephew just came up. He's the head of, or he works for the water department, a town called Escondido. Lives in Valley Center. This weekend, I ran him and his son out to the rock and his wife after eating at Carla's. And they go, whoa, what is that plant? What's happening with the, you know, the power plant? And I said, well, they're talking about doing a battery plant. And he said, whatever you do, try and get it moved. He said, we have a battery plant in Valley Center. It went up. Their throats were burning. It took about a day for it to, you know, put it out. He said, we also have a battery plant in Escondido, 5 or 10 miles away. It also went up and burned. So here's two other, you know, small little areas. Both of the battery plants have just cooked away, and he said he felt it in his lungs. They, you know, did a one-mile radius where everyone had to evacuate. And so the main thing is, if you can get it out of the populated area, the city can still collect revenues if you can get it on your outer sphere. And just reiterate, if there's a chance of trying to convince Vistra, you know, do a property trade or something to get it out of the center of town. So that's just kind of my 2 cents. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Betty Winholtz, and I figured out how to make a little slideshow. It doesn't. I sent it in two different forms.
I received the second email with the Google link, but my access was denied when I clicked on it. I reached out to you a couple of times.
Oh.
I apologize. We can do a flash drive or some other mechanism that.
So I think this is really this. I'm Betty Winholtz. I don't know if I said that. I think this is why it's really important to have an overhead so these kinds of things don't happen. I'm still going to push for that because I know you're still working on doing the electronics differently here. So that would be really sweet if we could have an overhead. So I'll tell you what was on my slide. I want to talk about trees, the city public trees, and what's been going on since August when I came and talked before you and showed you slides then about what happened at Monte Young Park and how the trees were drastically, you weren't trimmed, they were butchered. Yes, thank you. So what I wanted to let you know is that I believe that we have a general plan, we have a zoning ordinance, we have the Coastal Act, and we have an urban forest management plan. And all of these documents address this. And in my opinion, all four of those documents have been ignored over the last 3 months. And if you've been seeing what's been going on our street trees, you may agree. You hire an arborist to give advice to your staff, who then hires tree cutters. There are three basics that tree cutters are told from arborists. One, you never cut more than 25% of a tree. You trim it up 12 feet if you're over a street. You trim it up 8 feet if you're over a sidewalk. And if you'll notice the tree across the street from Legends as well as the Siren, there's a tree there that's probably been trimmed up 30 feet. And there's other trees around town that's been happening too as well. The third thing is you never trim more than, you do the 25%. You don't do more than that. You try to maintain your canopy. And so there's the 25%, there's the height limit, and then there's also, will she remember? And she may not. So the point being that what I feel is not happening is oversight from the city staff towards either educating or instructing the people they hire to trim our trees. I will bring back that slideshow next meeting, And I will send it to you personally, all to the city council, as well as to staff. And I really wish that you would do what you said you would do back in August, which was stop this kind of butchering and let us have our urban forest. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. And yeah, congratulations to the people that are coming on soon to the council. And thank you to the ones that are leaving and the ones that are staying. So we really appreciate you all. My name's Natalia Mirzoyan, and I wanted to go back to the battery storage from the standpoint of a meeting that I attended Saturday that was sponsored by the REACT Alliance and had some speakers that were talking about mainly offshore wind and how effective it is as far as filling in the gaps that we need for energy creation. And the speakers were Bonnie Brady, who is head of a fishing association on the East Coast, and she had tremendous information that was very interesting, and two other speakers. There was David Henderson, who's an economist and I think a professor emeritus from the PSI, the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. And finally, Michael Hogan. Thank you. Anyhow, the whole program, oh, there was one other speaker, Zanzara Landrum, our esteemed city council member, also talked. But the program, all in all, was phenomenal. If you watch for it, I'm sure it will come up on the REACT Alliance website, but no one who sees that will think offshore wind is a viable possibility for us. It's just a horrible idea. And the battery thing, you know, I think it's connected, but I will say that it's probably not a good idea to put it by the water storage, the water reclamation place, because of the hospital that's so close.
Thank you.
Good evening, City Council, Mayor, and staff. My name is Betsy Gaudette Cross, and I have just a couple things that I want to bring up. This is really minor, but you know the bike paths by the cloisters and over kind of by the Vistra? That you've got a bike path, and then you have a people path. It would be lovely if you put those little decals or the symbols for bike, because people walk on the bike path, and if you're biking, and then I don't know, it's a little minor thing that would help those of us who bike so we don't run into people. And I don't care which path we you designate, but that would just be really helpful for those of us who ride bikes. I live on Zanzibar, which is really close to the 3300 Panorama development, and I have some big concerns which have been expressed, but one of the things that I heard at one of the meetings is that they plan for 60 days to have 70 truckloads of dirt that will go in and fill in that big dip. Think of that if you live on Trinity or one of those little streets, 60 days, 70 dump trucks. And I do have that number right, right? Okay. Because I always kind of want to reverse them. So I just think that would be horrible if you lived on any of those streets. The streets are so skinny to begin with that to have a dump truck full of dirt and cars and whatever. There are way too many homes planned for that area. I know it's been reduced, but still, 42 homes is way too many. When you think of, you know, two extra cars per 42 homes in that little area, and if you've ever tried to get out of Yerba Buena to go across to get onto Highway 1, it's a mess. That intersection is crazy, and then you add all those extra cars. I always think, I lost my house in a forest fire when I was 12 years old, so fire is a major thing for me. And I think, what if there were a fire up there and we were all trying to get off on the freeway from Yerba Buena with all those extra cars? That just, I just think of Lahaina and I freak out. I was also at a meeting that talked about the slides in that area, and every time it rains, I see slides because they're just right there. I'm right at the top of Zanzibar, so I see them all the time. And anyway, I'm just very concerned, and as far as Vistra, location, 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 I'm not against energy. I'm just against the location.
Thank you. I'm going to ask everyone to stick to the 3 minutes or less. We have a very busy agenda this evening. Anyone else?
Good evening, city staff, members. Michelle Lester Catteray, 20-year resident, Morro Bay. I have a couple of questions, or a couple of concerns, one being the 3300 panorama and the potential development that's to go in. Of the 21 environmental factors, the studies that were done, only six, the potential was for 21, only six have been done. And of those six, they were all found to be less than significant. That is absolutely flooring information, considering the fact that there are continuously, I mean, I've lived down that street for over 5 years now, and with the significant rains that we've gotten, from my home, I see where the Panay slide had occurred, and I see how it breaks down when there is significant water. The other concern is that if we should have 46 houses developed, which will now be all concrete, asphalt, etc., the amount of water that comes down off of Panorama and goes under the condos, comes out between the condos and a residential home by tide. The water during the last major rain we had was from the side of the condo to the side of the house, and then it went under tide and came out behind the other homes that are kind of off of Whitby Way, and then it goes down under Caltrain Highway 1 and dumps out onto the beach. Who's going to take care of that property and the amount of water? Will that, I mean, it's collecting silt and it's never taken care of. That's another potential for flooding on top of it. The other thing is the traffic study. There's no way that our streets without sidewalks, curbs, and gutters can handle the amount of traffic that 46 homes plus, you know, four people per home average and the ADUs. The impact will be significant. We have no stop signs. We have no yield signs. The danger is there. And after the incident that occurred in town, again, too many tourists driving around town, not paying attention. This needs to be addressed. So, and the other thing is the tree situation, the fund, I'll discuss it when that comes up. But that's it for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. AGP, you have a raised hand in the queue.
Yes, ma'am, Chair. One moment. Yeah. J449, you are able to speak?
Yeah. So you can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to talk about the tree situation. I used to work for the city of San Luis Obispo. I've lived here in Morro Bay for over 40 years, and one of my jobs was over there. And we worked in taking care of the trees and the sidewalks. And what we would do is we'd pull up the sidewalk and we'd figure the problem out underneath, cut some roots and dig things out, and then level things out, and then put down new concrete. And we'd leave the trees, the whole tree. Now you hire private contractors to lean on their shovels and chop down the trees. Morro Bay needs their trees. I think you should consider keeping them and other ways of saving, replacing the sidewalks, updating sidewalks. And the other thing is I want to talk about is the battery storage system. If they do put that battery storage system in, they're going to have their own fire department. It's just ridiculous how dangerous those are. I'm sure that they'll be able to probably make their arrangements with people in the state to probably get the permits. But if they do, they better include in there enough money to put in their own fire station to put them out when they blow up. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say. Just save the trees and get rid of the batteries. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Thank you very much, everyone. We'll try and see if we can get the city manager to give us a, not tonight, update after she has an opportunity to work with Public Works and the maintenance supervisor on the status of the trees. With that, we'll move to consent agenda. I'll open public comment on items on the consent agenda, 7A through 7D, please. AGP, are there any raised hands in the queue?
No, ma'am. No raised hands on Zoom.
Anyone for public comment on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council and ask if anyone wants to pull any items, 7A through 7D. We'll make a motion for you. Yeah, we can pull it. Which one?
Yeah, I just like to pull 7D.
7D, thank you. That's fine, because I was going to make a comment also. Yeah. Ask for a motion to approve items 7A through 7C.
I motion to approve items 7A through 7C.
And a second, please.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 7D, Councilmember Edwards.
I just wanted to recognize this nonprofit who has spent years, I don't even know how many, but years, Morro Bay and Beautiful, their beautification program and the things that they have done in our community are just, I'm so grateful for. And they were kind of the OG original, and this was before Morro Bay and Bloom, who we are also very grateful for. But I think that I remember a few names, and Mayor, you'll have to help me, but I'd like to thank, Ann Reisner, and I think Nancy Johnson, and those of the people out there who have done such great work over the years. I've enjoyed a few license plates, and also I'm just really happy to see that with the closure of this organization, the money go towards something like it is. So I'm just so appreciative to all the work that this organization has done over the years. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would echo that also. I had the opportunity to attend a lot of events through the years. They've done beach cleanups for years. They used to do the Christmas light decorations where we'd take the trolley around and look at the lights at the houses. And they'd give out awards. But it was originally started back in the late 70s, I think, or these Warren Dorn, and the Dorn family were very involved in that beginning. So yes, it's definitely been a very welcomed organization in the community and the things they've done. So
I'd like to add too that one of the last big things that they put out there was the puzzle, and Morro Bay puzzle, which I gave, I think, to every person I knew for Christmas that year. But I still see them in stores, and I think that's also just something that will always be out there, and it will always remind me of this organization, and I also the license plate cover and all those things, but also very grateful, and for the donation on top of it to our city. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? That I'll move approval of item 7D and ask for a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to our first item, 8A, review and adoption, draft funding recommendation for 2025 Community Development Block Grant CDBG Program, Community Development Director, Mr. Singwald.
Good evening, Erlon Singwald, Community Development Director, and I have a PowerPoint presentation here that the clerk is pulling up. Before I start my presentation, I did want to take a moment to thank our assistant planner, Eric Valentine, for preparing this staff report. This was one of his first assignments as a planner with the city, and he did a great job coordinating with the county and the Public Works Department to put this application together. So I'll go ahead as the PowerPoint is getting pulled up, kind of go over, here we go. Some background on the Community Development Block Grant Program. So the city of Morro Bay, along with five other cities, joins the county in what's called the San Luis Obispo Urban County Consortium to receive CDBG funding directly from HUD as part of the Urban County Entitlement Consortium. The total funding available to City of Morro Bay based on the HUD formula is about $59,000. The draft funding recommendations that we are presenting to council this evening, if approved by council, will be published by the county for public comment. And then after the public comment period, we'll actually bring those recommendations back to be approved by council as a consent agenda item, and then they'll be forwarded on to the county and then ultimately approved by the Board of Supervisors. And the date for that is anticipated to be April of next year. We have two applications to consider for CDBG funding. One is under the public services category and the other under the public facilities category. And those two applications are summarized here. So first, so five cities, a homeless coalition applied to actually the county for a portion of the city's CDBG allocation. I believe five cities homeless coalition applies to all the cities for a portion of their public services CDBG funding. They're requesting $3,000 of the city's CDBG allocation. That is less than the total maximum available for public services. So per HUD regulations, the maximum amount that a jurisdiction can allocate to public services, so that means homeless services, for example, that's one of the most common public services, is 15% of the total allocation. So 15% of the city's total allocation works out to about $8,800, and five cities is requesting $3,000, so well below the 15% maximum. But technically, the council could approve up to $8,837 to go to public services, such as Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Their request is specifically for funding for homelessness prevention, so keeping people in housing or helping to get people rehoused. This $3,000 wouldn't necessarily be earmarked for a Morro Bay resident, but it would be available. The total pool of funding from Five Cities is available to all eligible households within the county. And so making this allocation would be in that spirit of addressing homelessness as a regional issue, and there could be funding to benefit Morro Bay residents or any other county residents prevent homelessness. The other application is from our Public Works Department, and it is for, of course, the remainder and the majority of the funding. That's $42,000, and that is for ADA sidewalk repairs, specifically in the downtown area. The staff recommendation this evening is to fund the request by Five Cities Homeless Coalition and fund the Public Works ADA sidewalk repairs replacement project for a total of $45,418. And then as a technicality, additionally, we're asking council to authorize the city manager to make pro rata adjustments to the allocation based on any HUD budgetary changes to the approved final 2025 CDBG funding amount from San Luis Obispo County. What that means really is at this point of the CDBG process, the county doesn't know exactly what their allocation is going to be from HUD. They put together an estimate based on past funding patterns. And then once we get the final numbers from HUD, I think they usually come out in the springtime, then there may need to be some pro rata adjustments based on the actual amount that's available to the urban county and then what the city's formula-based share of that would be. I do have another slide after this recommendation slide regarding the cooperation agreement. So we do get questions from time to time about, you know, should the city of Morro Bay continue to participate in this urban county consortium, and, you know, how does that work and what are the different options that are available? So there is a legal mechanism called a cooperation agreement. That is the agreement by which various jurisdictions partner with the county to receive those entitlement CDBG funding through the county, rather than having to apply directly to the state to compete with other what are called non-entitlement jurisdictions for CDBG funding. So the city of Morro Bay has been a part of the urban county since 2011. The cooperation agreements are on a three-year cycle. So every 3 years, each of the cities gets to decide again whether or not they want to continue to be part of the urban county. We fairly recently entered into the last cooperation agreement with the county, and that lasts until 2026. So we wouldn't be able to exit the urban county until 2026. Another important thing to point out is per the terms of the cooperation agreement, the county is responsible for completing the majority of the administrative responsibilities of the CDBG program. There are a lot of federal regulations that jurisdictions have to comply with, such as doing environmental review under NEPA, and the city would be responsible for performing those responsibilities. There could be a portion of the CDBG funding that the city could receive from the state may be available to offset those costs, but it would be additional responsibilities for the city to take on. The one city in the county that is not part of the urban county is the city of Grover Beach. The city of Grover Beach's demographics are a little bit different, and that affects their competitiveness for CDBG funding at the state level compared to what the city of Morro Bay could potentially receive. I think kind of the upshot of this whole discussion is if there is any interest in exiting the urban county, then the recommendation, you know, for that would be, you know, first, we have to wait until our current cooperation agreement expires. And second, we would most likely want to hire a consultant to do a more of an in-depth analysis to see whether or not that's something that would financially benefit the city or not. And that's actually what Grover Beach did before they decided to leave the urban county. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Questions for community development from Mr. Singwald? Councilmember Ford?
Yeah, I do. Well, I guess it would probably be part of that study that you just mentioned that Grover did, but I'm curious if we were to ever consider pulling out of the consortium, would we have to come up with a project to put those funds towards? Like, how does that look for a city that is on their own and they're not contributing to this countywide you know, like the Five Cities Coalition, that sort of thing? Would we have to have projects to contribute on a regular basis every year for those funds to go to?
So my first professional planning job out of college was as a consultant preparing CDBG applications for non-entitlement jurisdictions. That was many years ago, but basically, the state would issue a notice of funding availability, and there would be a certain amount that the city could apply for. And one of the most significant criteria in the scoring system is where the jurisdiction stands relative to that criteria of low moderate income population, overcrowding, and there's one other criteria that is escaping my mind right now, but that's a major factor. There's other factors that are included as well, but basically you put an application together, and there's only certain eligible activities you can apply for, just as is the case with this urban county, and then you compete with other jurisdictions based on essentially a scoring and rating and ranking system that the state employs. So there wouldn't be a guarantee of funding from year to year. In general, the city would be able to compete for a probably substantially higher amount of funds than we get automatically annually, but it wouldn't be guaranteed. And again, those the demographic criteria is a major factor.
Okay. And would you say, like, Grover has a lot of projects that are service oriented, and I'm curious, do they get funding because they had projects ready, or like, what's your experience with that as far as like serving the homeless or those types of projects? What I'm getting at is, like, is it, in your experience, is it difficult? It sounds like there's all the criteria, and let's say we fit that criteria. Do you have to have projects like shovel ready or a service that you're providing already to get funding? Or could you just pitch something that you want to do and hope that you get funding for that?
No, thank you. Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, one of the most important criteria is readiness, that you have a project all ready to go, and CDBG likes to be the kind of last gap funding source when you have all the other funding sources in place. So it can be challenging sometimes to have a project that's going to be ready to go and be competitive when you consider all the other criteria.
Okay, those are my only questions. Thank you.
Yeah, it was interesting as I was reading this report, I was trying to find and then found the fact that we had through this program five homes, basically households, people able to stay in their homes through this programming and the monies that come from this. So, and I know this is a struggle for us, and I'm hearing you, Mr. Singwal, talk about what it sounds like some barriers for us with regard to this kind of funding, and also some of the conversation that we had during our grant funding with regard to CapSlow and how we are, the resources that we lack with regard to being able to accommodate our unhoused, and the efforts there, our resources are minimal and it's difficult for us. So I'm seeing the benefits of remaining in this consortium, but I really appreciate that question that you just asked, Councilmember Ford, as well. I think that I'm just going to wait and hear what everybody else has to ask.
Thank you. Councilmember Barton, questions?
No.
Councilmember Edward Landrum, excuse me.
Can you, so it looks like the county's taking like close to $8,000. The county for like administrative costs. Is that, so they're getting twice what we're giving to five cities. Is that right?
Yeah, so the amount that the county receives for administration, that is a formula that's spelled out in the cooperation agreement. And that does recognize that they do take on the vast majority of those administrative responsibilities, like preparing the NEPA determinations for all the projects, for instance. But yes.
So that's a more important job than housing homeless people, it's apparently, because they're taking twice as much from our funds than we're giving to Five Cities Homeless Court Coalition, right? Just a comment. And then can, I don't know if it's you or Ms. Hansen, could you explain, you know, there's been a lot of comments regarding the trees downtown. Could you talk about that?
Sure. So typically when we have sidewalk replacement projects that have been lifted because of the trees, we do remove the slab of concrete, look at the roots or whatever is protruding through, and talk with an arborist and see if we can trim the roots, which we've done many times, and been able to put the concrete back to save the tree. Sometimes the roots are too much, and if you remove those, make the tree unstable, or it's, you know, it's going to kill the tree eventually, and they'll recommend removing the tree, which then we replace that tree after that time. So we try to save the tree if possible and put the sidewalks back. Sometimes it's not possible.
Okay, and then this is money that's going to be added to, we've done this in other prior years, and we haven't done the work yet, right?
No, the last 2 years for this project, we did do the work. It's done through the maintenance division.
Okay. And so there's, like, I've noticed myself, there's several trees that are have been taken out downtown and that are not haven't been replaced. Is that going to be part of this project, or?
They might be part of a different project of being replaced, but typically, yes, we do remove them, unless there's some reason not to put a tree in that particular spot. We try to replant the trees there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Public comment is open on this item.
Betty Winholtz. This is controversial for me for a couple of reasons. One, the idea that we need to leave this consortium has been I've put out there for several years, because a city like Grover, who's actually smaller than we are, is able to be successful. And of all the cities in the county, they have probably offered more services to the homeless than other cities, and certainly the county. And so it surprises me that when we have someone like Sharon O'Leary or other people that have followed her who have said, here's, you know, half a dozen programs we could be doing and we haven't, that we're using this community development block grant for fixing sidewalks instead of addressing the homeless, whether that's safe parking or paying for showers or the refrigerator to put in the back room for the homeless meal on Monday nights. It seems to me it's not difficult to come up with projects that would address the homeless. So to me, that's more of what these kinds of grants should be used for than for sidewalks, because we already have a budget, a line item in our budget, $150,000 to do that. So this is just, in a sense, icing on the cake. The second thing that for me that's controversial about that is buried in the application to the county for this project is saying that they are going to take out, they're addressing Harbor Street, Morro Bay Boulevard, Main Street, Napa, and maybe it was Monterey, and looking seriously at taking out the trees when they want to repair the sidewalk, which to me is removing major vegetation without presenting it as such, that you're doing it a little bit at a time instead of looking at the big picture that cumulatively you are changing our urban forest management plan, which is documented 2014. It still exists. No one's paying attention to it. So for me, we're doing everything we can not to preserve our trees, which if I had my slides, you would see it says in there that it is, there's a quote that's similar to, it is essential and part of Morro Bay's identity that we have trees in our urban forest downtown. So I just think it's really important that we acknowledge what's happening, not just right now, but what's being proposed, and that needs to be decided by the public, not by staff, not by the tree cutter, But we as a group need to say, this is what our urban forest needs to look like.
Hi, you guys. How you doing? I'm Mandy Davis. I don't live here in Morro Bay, but I have for a very long time. I do have a tourist-serving business here. And you all know me as a critter freak, nature freak. Bottom line is I'm going to fight for nature and in all its forms. And I 100% agree with Betty on every single aspect of what she just said. Here is the way that I see it. And this is number one, this is happening. It should be a decision by the people that live here. We live here for very specific reasons. I work here for a very specific reason. The people that come to me to enjoy Morro Bay come here for very specific reasons. And that has to do with not just the beauty of our estuary, but the beauty of our lovely little town. I have traveled all over the world in coastal areas, and Morro Bay people really gravitate to cities like what we have, and we should take care of that. This is death by a thousand cuts, and when they take out a couple, a little of this, a little of that, and it is destroying our urban forest, this is not paying attention to the whole. And as our city, you know, we need to, you know, we've been so focused on our waterfront lately that we need to start to pay attention to the big picture. What is it that we want to present to the public? What is it that we want for our future generations? And to reduce, you know, the trees, and they're gorgeous, and, you know, there's their habitat, and the night herons love it, and the hummers, and we walk down our sidewalks, and it is such an addition. So there are ways that they can repair. I've seen it happen in other cities, that they can repair these sidewalks, and they cannot harm nor destroy the trees. But we should not be allowing the death by a thousand cuts, because there's going to be a certain point in time when we're going to go, well, I was going to use the SH, you know what I mean. Well, oh, and all of a sudden it's gone, and the habitat is gone, and these beautiful shade trees are gone. We cannot allow that to happen, you guys.
Natalia Marzoyan, I think it's an assault on my sensibilities to have so much gratitude to the Dorns, specifically Phyllis Dorn, who is responsible for those trees in town and for Morro Bay Beautiful. And then in the next breath, we're talking about ripping them all out. And what does that say about our appreciation of her legacy? But I will say there is a way. I think a lot of it has to do with the problems involved in planting them incorrectly. If you have trees that have troublesome roots, what they do now is they have a sleeve that they plant the roots in that goes way down below the danger area, and then the roots spread out below the problem zone. So I'm just suggesting that maybe even though they were planted incorrectly, there's a way to mitigate that in hindsight to solve the problem and save the trees. Thank you.
Michelle Lester-Catteray, Morro Bay. Regarding the funds for the Community Development Block Grant, a portion of these funds could and should be allocated to homeless services. There's no reason that with the amount of funds that we do have that we couldn't help those that are already in our area, like 805 outreach, as well as, you know, help with the funding of the Monday night suppers. And, you know, winter is upon us. Having warming, you know, some time when we could, you know, provide some incentive for, you know, local rooms to be available for some of our homeless, because it does get nippy on the coastline occasionally. I see these as being for human services as opposed to Morro Bay Public Works services. And I'm seeing that, you know, you want to, you know, as much as we outsource and have consultants, we should have somebody come in and consult regarding the trees and how to mitigate the sidewalks to save some of these, you know, these mature trees. We are designated a tree USA as well as a bird refuge. These trees are part of our character of Morro Bay. The other question was, is there an estimate of how many trees are on the chopping block and how many of those will actually be replaced? That would be nice to find out. Other than that, thank you.
AGP, are there any raised hands in the queue?
No, Madam Chair, there is not.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Mr. Singwald, any comments regarding the number? Is there any plan in place yet with the trees? Or if Ms. Hansen's department can answer that, has there been any determination yet or evaluation of where these areas would be in arborists? Has that even happened yet?
No, it hasn't happened yet. That would come later. When they see how much money, then how far they can, how many different sidewalks they could do with that amount of money. So the streets have been determined, but exactly how many trees would be potentially affected has not been determined.
And so that evaluation would be done with city staff and an arborist?
Correct.
Okay. And so just I guess I'd like to have you reiterate that you look at addressing the root situation. I mean, the sidewalks are horrific. I've already fallen, and I've fallen on the pods and smacked my face. But I also value the canopy. I think everybody does. So I guess there's some disconnect and an assurance or feeling that the city is going to do due diligence to make sure that we can fix those sidewalks where we can and minimize the replacement of trees.
Correct, and save the trees. Yeah, so it's not that we're not saying that all the trees in the way of the sidewalks are going to be removed. You know, they'll all be evaluated. We will all see which trees we can save and which ones that we can't due to the roots. So, you know, the Muni Code 12.08 regulates the trees in the public right-of-way, and that's what we're following. So that's a process that Public Works follows. So
thank you. Questions? Comments?
I have a question just to kind of piggyback off of what you just asked, Mayor. So let's say there are trees that are determined to have to be removed. In that process, does council need to give direction to replace the trees, or could it be determined that, like, trees should never exist here? And if that were to, okay, one more part of that question. If that would be true, then could we direct staff to replace a tree somewhere else?
Yeah, the Muni Code requires that we replace the tree. It doesn't require that we replace it in that exact location, but it is to be replaced. So it would be replaced somewhere else if that exact location is not a good location for some reason.
Okay. Thank you. I do have one more question. So we have a lot of comments on keeping the money and doing something here. Because I know that I thoughts ran through my head, like the 805 outreach and those groups. But I'm curious, after reading, you know, when I read this report, and so maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it's my understanding, because we are a part of the consortium, that we have to, I'm seeing that the only other alternative isn't to keep the funds and donate it somewhere locally, but that the only alternative is to change the amount that we would give to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition.
So I'm just wanting to get some clarity on what we're even able to do with these funds, considering the fact that we still are part of the consortium. And I know to our wonderful community member that has been fighting for us to leave that over the years, I think that if there are some projects, which I feel like there are more projects coming along, that is something to consider. It might be competitive, but it may be worth going for. But if you could answer, maybe Mr. Singwald or you know, someone could answer, do we have a choice in supporting local efforts beyond what's been given to us as far as the two options?
Sure. So, the mic just got a lot louder. Wow. Let me go over the options. So we do have options. So I'm just going to kind of go through them one at a time. There are more options than listed here. So option one, of course, is the staff recommendation where we give about $42,000 for ADA sidewalk repairs and $3,000 to Five Cities Homeless Coalition. The other option listed on the staff report is if we wanted to maximize the amount of CDBG funds that we allocate to public services, we could allocate up to 15% of our total allocation, so $8,837 to Five Cities Homeless Coalition. The other option is we could not allocate funding to Five Cities. That is up to the council, and then allocate the total allocation to ADA sidewalk repairs. Getting to more of your specific question about could we allocate it to a local organization. No other local organizations applied for funding. These types of homelessness programs take a lot of administration. It's not something the city could just, receive these funds for and start to administer at the city level. That would take a lot of work and capacity building and administration. That's my answer.
Okay, that clarifies for me. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think that if you could also answer, how do community organizations know about this? Like, how do we get the word out so that they know that this is funding that will be coming available, just so that we know in the future what the process is, if you have that information available. I know I'm just putting you on the spot right now, but if anyone in staff knows, how do we alert organizations about this, or is it a county alert? Do we locally alert organizations? Is it on our city website? Like, how do they know to apply?
So the county does pretty significant outreach when they release their notice of funding availability. They have a very detailed mailing list with all of the nonprofit and homeless service provider organizations. I believe they make public service announcements with local media, publish notices. They've held multiple what they call needs assessment workshops throughout the county, including one here in the city of Morro Bay, and they also hold a needs hearing at the County Board of Supervisors. So it's, I would say, very widely publicized at the county level.
Okay, I that's important to know. Okay, that's it for my questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Edwards.
Yeah, thank you for that, Councilmember Ford, because I was thinking along the same lines. Again, I hate to go back to our own grant funding, but, it was interesting that we had CAPSLO for the first time, in the process that we've had here with our grant funding of $60,000. And so I know it's something that we probably need to address in a lot bigger conversation with regard to the lack of resources that we have when dealing with homelessness. And so this is touching upon some of those things again. And I think that's probably what I'm hearing from you, is that mutual concern that this money is going to where, we most need it. And It is not to say, in my point of view, that ADA repair is not important. I do think that, as the mayor, described her own walking down the street, and I walk downtown every day, and there's clearly our sidewalks, there are roots coming up that are pulling up the sidewalk, and it's hard, and oftentimes I walk around, so that's not good for our community either, and from a well-being or risk management standpoint. So but tonight clearly we have a decision to make onto how to handle the monies. So I'm just looking at the three options and just wondering what the council would feel comfortable with. I know that we do, at least if I saw this correctly, we do have $150,000 still rolling over into this ADA repair program, right? Is that correct? At least I think that's what I saw in the budget review. Yeah, okay. So I'm wondering if maybe we would be looking to do a different type of split, or if we want to just converse about that for a minute.
Ms. Hansen, the funding that's in for the ADA, is that part, that's not just for sidewalk, though. Isn't part of that for the crossing there on Main Street and some of those other things?
You are correct, yeah. Yes.
So a lot of that I know has been allocated for that crossing there.
Yes, correct.
Thank you. I appreciate all the comments, and we need to get to the other two council members down here. I guess tonight I don't want to overthink $59,000, but I think it creates the question, and maybe this is where we can address these types of fundings, just like the other grant funding, with our goals coming up, and how, not necessarily as to how we're going to allocate it, but how we address it. Mm-hmm. And so that might be a place to talk about whether or not we stay in this group or we go out on our own like Grover Beach and those other things. And I'm hearing, you know, that the staff is going to do their due diligence for our trees, and I have to support that effort and know that, you know, there's a lot of eyes watching, and we have a public works advisory board and a recreation board that, you know, can participate in that. So with that, I want to move down to the other council members. Council Member Landrum.
I just want to, I'm fine with the distribution. I just want to really kind of dig into a little more on the tree trimming or tree removal and the process in doing that. And so it's someone with the city and the tree trimmer making this decision in the future.
Correct. That's the way of the city. So that whenever we, you know, move the sidewalk and look at the tree and see what we can remove, we have the arborist there with us to help us decide whether we can cut a root. There's certain ways that they can cut it to maybe, you know, help it heal better. But there's been many a times that we've been able to cut roots out from the underneath the sidewalk, put the sidewalk back, and it's fine. Right outside of city manager's office is a good example. It used to be pretty raised right there. We went underneath, we removed some of the roots, and we put the concrete back, and it's perfectly fine right now.
Okay, because I'm hearing that's a very big concern, and I think it is for all of us here. And then I just would like to know how, because I'm concerned about the trees that haven't been replaced. Okay. And then if some of these are removed, are they going to fall in that same situation? Because that becomes kind of a tree desert, and that's not what we're looking for. So how do we ensure that the trees are replaced in our downtown
I'm
urban
not
forest?
Sure specifically which trees haven't been replaced, but I can look into it and see, and maybe see why they weren't replaced. But I was told that any trees that would be removed part of this project would be replaced. So,
and when you say replace, it's in that same process they're
unless,
replaced.
In the same spot, unless there's some reason we don't want to put a tree there.
But it's in the same process. It's not like years later or
it
months.
Should be in the same process.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Like everyone else here, I'm downtown every day also, and the I'm surprised that I haven't joined you on the sidewalk with the big round ones that are so easy. It's like they come and get your foot and make you slip. Anyway, so we do have a beautiful downtown, but we may not have chosen the very best trees for the purpose that we have them there. And so there's, I think there's things that need to be looked at, and your folks are looking, are doing that, and also in the trimming. So I think there's a, it's an ongoing process, and you can read many, there are lots of things that have popped up in the plant world talking about what once upon a time was considered to be the absolute best tree ever, and then 25 years down the road, you'd see that, oh, it's not such a great one either. So it's an ongoing process. I don't think we'll ever hit on the exact right trees for us, but thank you for working on it.
Thank you. I think it's a challenge in the city there, especially on the boulevard, as we value that canopy it offers, mm-hmm. but try and balance that with the safety and well-being of those walking the sidewalks that have lifted so extreme. Any other questions or comments? Are we ready for a motion?
No, just the only comment I have is that, you know, this, given that this is the two options that we have, you know, I also think it's important, and I would support what you have all said about making sure that our city is safe as well, but being respectful of the beautiful wildlife that exists here. And making sure that we do our best to keep it. So I'm willing to make a motion if everybody's done. Let's see here. Okay, so I move. I have to read that entire. Let's hold on. That's a really hefty. Okay.
Mayor?
Yes, go ahead.
Mayor, if, Councilmember Four is preparing for the motion. I wanted to clarify a few things. One was that public asked about other projects being considered. I wanted to say that this is an annual event that we consider the CDBG project. And then we did internally considered other, discussed other options. For example, very facility, the upgrade of the facility, would that be qualified for this this funding? Because there is a human element to it, and we made that argument. And however, we discussed it with the county, and it's not going to be eligible. The CDBG, one of my point is that CDBG program is a very specific. They have a very specific requirements as stated by community development director. So therefore, it's difficult for somebody, for anybody to put forward an eligible project and also able to implement the project. And especially when you look at an amount, it's not a lot of money. So you want to do any sort of homeless and human service project, $50,000 is not really, it just get started. And so then it's a lot of times they're not going to be very attractive for homeless services and so on and so forth. The other part, I know we're getting there, and I wanted to say that I know we're city council are considering perhaps some other projects. If you don't, the one that we're put forward before you is eligible. If you don't like this project, and the fear that I'm afraid the money will just go back to the pot, and then we'll have no end up have no project. So we do want to proceed with some project to be able to take advantage of this money that put forward for us. Now, on the trees, I know Acting Public Works Director had to give you a very good explanation. I wanted to just circle back to say that this project, the sidewalk ADA repair project, is not about removing trees. It's really just about removing the barrier on our sidewalk so that the sidewalk can be ADA in compliance, which is another federal regulation that we have to deal with. The public works director actually is the city's ADA compliance coordinator, and so then I believe he's been in discussions with state agencies on ADA compliance on these kind of issues. Therefore, that helped him to make that decision on the ADA on the sidewalk. So there are thoughts put behind this application. And I also, before tonight, I also asked the city's risk management manager to run some report for us just to see the liabilities. We do, over the last 20 years, we are looking at the report here says that on sidewalk, just altogether, trip and fall, and total cost, we received 117 claims over the last 20 years. The total cost is over $500,000. So average claim costs more than $4,000. And with this data, if we were able to get $42,000 to help with the sidewalk repair, not about the trees, I don't even know this money would be able to really take out the trees. The trees are very, very expensive to remove. But we certainly wanted to be very mindful about the public commons, the protecting the trees. If we don't have to, as the mayor's was Ms. Henderson stated, we would keep that. I recall there were an incident, just not very long ago, that somebody in front of the business and. Business actually approached the city saying that the tree has caused the sidewalk a crack and it has become a problem. And it's actually our public works maintenance manager had to deal with that. And it went to KSBY to, there was like a discussion and was being created some issues. And so my point is that there is a known issue on the sidewalk, not so much about the trees. Trees could be part of the issue, and again, our focus is to repair the sidewalk so that our sidewalk can be ADN in compliance. And that's, as Council Member Barton stated, is going to be ongoing. I don't think it is $42,000 is going to take care of everything, but it's just going to help. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that update. That helps put some clarity in it.
Okay, and for the record, I want to say that I don't know that any of us dislike the items that we're voting on. I just want to make sure that's clear. It's just kind of vetting the options that were out there and getting clarity on the process, and maybe, you know, in the future changing that process. But
Councilmember Ford, you can just ask for the resolution number to be approved. You don't have to read this whole item.
I was actually going to just read. So I'll go ahead and say it, and then you can tell me. I was going to say, can we approve the 2025 draft funding recommendations for the two applications received under resolution number 71-24?
Yes.
I second that.
Thank you. Voice vote, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Where are we at? Five-minute break, please. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Welcome back. We're going to move on. We have three business items this evening. We're going to start with 9A, discussion and direction regarding agreement for city attorney services. And I will turn it over if the city manager's ready. I believe this is your item.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me take the opportunity to express my sincere thanks to the to the fire chief, and he's been a wonderful acting city manager while I was gone. And so we spoke on this item, and Chief McQueen is going to
lead it off. Thank
yep.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Like Ms. Kimball said, this item came about while I was in an acting capacity, while she was out of the country. And just for continuity, I thought it would be best for me to finish it off and bring it to Council. So last Monday, November 4th, the city attorney, Chris Neumeier, provided notice to the city that he was going to be departing his current firm, Alsher Winder, and provided notice to the city that same date With that, he's going to be Assistant City Attorney Lana Lehman and another legal specialist, Christy Lopez, are all leaving NW, and they are going to be joining the new firm. So with that, it puts the city in a position where we have to secure continued legal services. The city has partnered with Alsher Winder for city services since March 2014 and has retained the services of Chris Neumeyer, a partner with that firm, since 2019. The city is currently under contract with Alsher Winder, and they are committed to providing continued legal representation to the city. With that being said, the new law firm that attorney Chris Neumeyer will be employed with as of Thursday, November 14th, is Burke, Williams, and Sorensen, and they offer the city an agreement with the same legal rates that the city presently pays for legal services and with essentially the same terms in all material respects to the current agreement that A&W does. There are two distinct exceptions. One, the new firm would not provide bond services, and with that, they believe it's a potential conflict of interest, so they do not provide that service, and that Burke, Williams, and Sorensen may provide the city a 30-day notice rather than a 60-day notice for withdrawal of representation. Both of these contract proposals are designated as at-will. The city attorney is considered an at-will employee and can be discharged with or without notice, so that if we chose to stay with A&W or if we went with the firm BWS, the city council would retain that option should at some point the new council decided they wanted to reevaluate city services such as an RFP or looking at other options. We have a proposal from Alsher Winder to have attorney Martin Kazanowicz and attorney Paul Early named as replacement city attorney and assistant city attorney. And Mr. Kazanowicz is here in the audience and able to answer questions. And then our current city attorney, Mr. Neumeyer, is also here and able to answer questions regarding the proposal from the alternate firm. So with that, we have two options for you. The first is to continue the agreement for city services with Alsher and Winder and request appointment of a new city attorney and assistant city attorney. Or option two, direct staff to approve the agreement with Burke, Williams, and Sorensen for city attorney services with the continuity of Chris Neumeyer as the appointed city attorney and terminate the agreement with Alsher Winder with the exception of closure of ongoing items to be specified by the city. And then there's also option three, which is the city council could provide alternate direction to staff. And with that, I'll turn it over to council for questions.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you for stepping in with this short window. Questions from council? I'll start to my right. Councilmember Landrum, questions?
I don't have any questions right now. Thank you.
Councilmember Barton, questions?
No questions.
Councilmember Edwards, questions? Councilmember Ford, questions?
Not at this time.
I will open public comment on this item.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. My name is Martin Kazanowicz. I'm a partner with Alsher Winder, and the firm has been providing you legal services since 2014. As a matter of fact, I was the second finalist when Joe Pannone was chosen to be the city attorney here in 2014. A little bit about myself. I've been an attorney since 87, been a municipal lawyer since 1990. I've been a city attorney for probably 10 or 11 different cities in California over the years. I've been a city attorney for Grover Beach for 14 years on contract. Five Cities Fire Authority actually was instrumental in forming that, and then later came back actually as I am now general counsel again for Five Cities Fire Authority. I've worked for the city of Fresno for 9 years as a deputy, doing a lot of land use, doing legal police advice. I was a legal police advisor for the Fresno PD for a period of time. Opened my own firm, ran that for 16 years, and then went in-house in Moreno Valley It's a city of about 220,000 as a city attorney. Was there 4 years and then joined the firm. At that time it was Oliveras Madruga, Lemieux and O'Neill. Keith Lemieux and Steve O'Neill are professional acquaintances and friends of mine. We then moved and joined Al Shirewinder about 2.5 years ago. We're here to obviously ask you that you continue using Al Shirewinder for your legal services. I think that as far as continuity and transition, one of the things that should be considered is the fact that I looked at the bills this year, who has worked on the city matters over this last 10 months, almost 11. And there is over 25 attorneys in our firm that have worked for the city in different areas, basically depending on the assignments provided by Mr. Neumeier, provided work and provided product, legal advice and legal product to the city over this year. Those 20-some-odd attorneys are still going to be there. They will still be, they're familiar with the city, they're familiar with the work. I would head the legal team for City of Morro Bay, Paul Early, who was my assistant city attorney in Moreno Valley for all 4 years I was there. Excellent lawyer. We worked well together as a team. We did in Moreno Valley. We would propose him as the assistant city attorney. Between us, we have probably 7 years of legal experience. We would seamlessly be able to pick up and provide those services to you if that was the desire of the council. It just gives you an option.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else for public comment on this item?
Council, thank you. This is Jeff Heller. What happened to 30 days notice? That's what I'm wondering. You know, I mean, we got these great attorneys, great contracts, and the guy gives us a week's notice or something. This is not right. In all seriousness, I did draft an agenda correspondence I sent to you, and I want to make it simple tonight. And I was really proud of myself because I got 3 C's in there, kind of an alliteration, when I structured the speech, which I always thought was a good thing. So the first one is cost. And what we pay in legal fees has been an issue in this city for many, many years. What you hear on the streets is, well, we used to have our own attorney, in-house staff. He took care of everything. I think that's really the past. I don't see that as what the world looks like today. But I thank you for looking at costs. That's your job. You have fiduciary responsibility to look at these costs, and you've done that. And the fees do seem high to me. The second C, though, is the context. I see lots of events that have happened in the last 8 to 10 years that were unanticipated, that required a lot more legal services than we could have anticipated or expected. And I don't see that changing going forward, frankly. So the context to me is something I like to consider in this decision. Lastly, continuity is super important. There's no one who has the continuity and all the information, the institutional knowledge beyond what Mr. Neumeier has. Is he a perfect attorney? No. Have there been perfect decisions all the time and suggestions all the time? No, but I think he's done a remarkably good job. And I think for continuity alone, we should retain his services for at least 6 months. If you want to look for a staff attorney to take care of the day-to-day municipal duties that are fairly simple, that's great. I really believe at some point we're going to need more high-powered attorneys to help us deal with the big issues that face us, battery storage, offshore wind, and all the other things that a small harbor like ours deals with. So I suggest retaining him with his new firm for at least 6 months or a year, which will give you some time to look, continue to look closely at the costs and have some continuity in the meantime. Now is not a good time to make this change, in my opinion. Thank you.
Betty Winholtz, as a former city council member, following a former city council member, I'm going to disagree. I think the conservative thing to do is to stay with the firm that you have for a period of 4-6 weeks as you decide what you want to do. And I would think you is not the current people sitting up there, but the new council, because you, the new five people will be the ones that have to live with your decision. And I would hope that the current people who are leaving would allow the new council to make that choice. So I would rather see, because it is at will that you, and the, our contract is with the current firm, that you do that, and at whatever point you have a temporary person that can come in and cover, then you can dismiss the firm and do your search. And I'm not sure that I agree with how Mr. Heller is seeing the future, but I think that that's something that can be handled and needs to be decided by the new council what the context is. So I would encourage you to be conservative, stay with the current firm for a minimal amount of time until you get a temporary person in who covers until you get the real person. Thanks.
Good evening, Nicole Dorfman. I support what the previous speaker said. This is really a crossroads, I think, for our town. And we did just have an election, sort of. And it is a big decision to make. So I support maintaining the contract with the current firm until the new council is seated, and then they can figure out the next steps. And I like the idea, I don't know how feasible, of having somebody local. I do think it makes a big difference for somebody whose heart is in Morro Bay and wants to preserve our town the way that we do. So for me, a firm out of, you know, Orange County or LA or some big city, we're just another account to them. And not that I think that our current attorney has done a fine job, but is it the best that we can ask for? I think we just need to ask for the moon. We can ask for the perfect person. We're a wonderful place to live, and I think we will have people who want to come here and represent us and work like heck to preserve what we love about our community. So that's my hope for our future. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment on this item? AGP, are there any raised hands?
Yes, ma'am, we do have one raised hand. Judy Lynn, I've given you the opportunity to unmute.
Hello, good evening. My name's Judy Setting, and I live here in Morro Bay. And I'm looking at this decision as something that needs to be made by our new council. And I'm actually feeling quite encouraged by this because it gives us an opportunity to try to save some money. Over $900,000 for a year for an attorney is an awful lot of money, and somebody local would help us because we wouldn't be paying costs for their lodging when they're here. And I have grave concerns about how some of the legal things were handled in the past when we traded away our dollar lien on the power plant property. It is still unknown why we would do that without having gotten a phase two assessment for the toxicity of that property. And when I read the Department of Toxic Service Substance Control report, the toxicity levels look minimal and do not look like they would cost anywhere near $30 million. So that was pure negligence on our attorney's side, as far as I'm concerned, for not encouraging our staff to get an assessment and a remediation cost for that property, because, and then also allowing it to be valued at $9 million was ridiculous, 100 acres of coastal property. So I look forward to the opportunity to find representation at a lower fee and save our city some money. Thank you so much.
Is there anyone else, AGP?
Oh, no, ma'am, that completes the callers.
Thank you. With that, if there's no other public comment, I will close it and bring it back to council. Any questions from anyone before we go to comments?
Mayor, excuse me?
Yes.
If I'm not out of line, I was wondering, is it appropriate for our current city attorney to be able to speak on the contract or what is being proposed from his firm as well?
Yeah, I would probably allow 3 minutes, the same as we gave our existing firm.
Thank you.
Well, they're both our existing firms right now.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. Honorable Mayor, City Council members. As I communicated to you all before, I apologize for the short notice. I received an offer from a law firm that is considered to be, I think, the premier public law firm in the state, 170 attorneys, 10 offices, an office in Camarillo in San Jose. And after I notified my law firm of this offer, I let you all know. I would like to suggest that in terms of continuity, it's really the people that work with the city. It's not the letterhead. And the three main attorneys that work with the city, myself, Lana Lehman, Christy Lopez, we're all going to be at a new firm. And so for continuity's sake, we would be privileged and honored if you continue to work with us. Same rates, same contract. My partner, Martin, had mentioned that there were 20, 25 attorneys that had worked for Morro Bay. The three of us do the vast majority of the work, and there's a few specialists here and there that we call upon that do a few hours of work here and there. Any of the big law firms have those specialists, but the vast bulk of the work's done by the three of us, and so I think in terms of fiscal prudence also, I'd just like to point out that the staff report does say that temporary increased costs when newly assigned attorneys come up to speed on city matters. And I'd suggest that you might actually have double the cost if you actually bring in some new attorneys right now, and then you do an RFP in a few months, and then after that bring in new attorneys after that. Fiscally prudent approach, I think, would be to do just one RFP, keep the current team, and then if you do an RFP in the new year, have some prudence and patience, do interviews, and, you know, instead of just having two attorneys before you, have 5, 6, 7, 8. So the current legal team is willing to and would be honored to continue with continuity. And, you know, it's the people, it's not the letterhead. And if you have any questions about my new firm or the institutional knowledge that we have, I've been working for the city for 8 years now, either as assistant or as a city attorney. And there's a lot of projects going on right now. There's 3300 Panorama. Years ago, I worked on the jet fuel tank demo. I secured a performance bond for the city when there are concerns on that. I've been working on the best project in AB 205. If the city wants to engage in that process, who better than someone with the institutional knowledge that's been working on that for years? Been working on the wharf plant. We're wrapping that up. I helped the city save almost $4 million when we closed out FBV and Anvil in the last change orders they actually sent in. We got 781 Market Street. We got the Cayucas dissolution coming up for the water plant. Harbor issues, harbor policies, harbor leases. All that institutional knowledge, that is, well, with your primary legal team. So be honored and privileged if you would continue to stay with us, and look forward to your decision and hopefully continue to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeyer. Any questions for staff?
I have a question, yes. Mayor. So I have a question for
both of you. The first question would be, let me start with Attorney Neumeier. If with this new firm, how many, if Morro Bay were to keep you, so to switch firms, how many cities or entities would you be representing?
My primary client will be Morro Bay, and the only client that I'm directly assigned to will continue to be Morro Bay, as it has been for the time I've been with the city. So one client, Morro Bay.
Okay.
I would be doing work here and there for other cities, but I wouldn't be assigned to any other cities. I wouldn't be working with the other cities officially, and if that was the case, I would certainly talk to the council before that sort of decision was made.
Okay, so the same question goes for, and I apologize if I say your last name incorrectly, but Attorney, let me see if I can take a stab at it, Coczanowicz?
Very good, thank you.
can you say it for me? I'm sorry.
It's Coczanowicz.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I am currently the city attorney for the city of Ridgecrest, which meets twice a month. And, there's absolutely no conflicts and certainly have sufficient amount of time to do work for both cities on a full-time basis.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Councilmember Edwards.
Councilmember Ford, if I could, I think it should be clear on all the clients that folks are specifically assigned to. You know, I'm specifically assigned to Morro Bay, and so is Lana. They're not assigned to any other. I think that it's not just whether someone's a city attorney, it's whether they're general counsel for a district, whether they work with water districts and whatnot. So I think there's more to the question that you're asking both the attorneys here tonight.
Yeah, so my question is, do you represent any other cities or entities? So does that encompass that? I mean, yeah.
I'm general counsel for San Gabriel County Water District, which is a small district in San Gabriel Valley. They also meet twice a month. And should the council decide to move forward with retaining the firm, and I would become the city attorney, somebody else would step into that position.
Go ahead.
My question is for Martin, Mr. Coczanowicz. Thank you. We're a complicated city. We're small but complicated, and we've got, as you've heard, a lot of issues that we're facing, and probably more that we don't even know of. It happens. So I guess my question for you is, how familiar are you with the some of the issues that we have here, and you know, and what are you, how are you going about learning about things?
Thank you. Excellent question. I've had less time to process this proposed change than the council. But in the time that I've had, I have looked obviously at council packets and agendas and looked at documentation that is available online. I know that there are issues with your water supply is reliant almost 95% on state water. When state water shuts down, you have issues trying to provide water to the residents. So that's a matter that has to be addressed and obviously remedied. The treatment plant, the BESS battery system, the whole controversy about that being installed. So those are all issues that are very complicated. They exist. You have a lot of infrastructure that needs repairing, but I see that through the budget amendment, you're putting a lot of money into the streets, sidewalks, Highway 1 intersection. So there's several million of dollars being put towards that. Facilities, I know part of the capital improvement project, capital improvement money is going into potential renovation or upgrade of the audio and visual situation here in the council chambers. I have been working in this arena in a municipal law for many years. I've had many clients, some less complicated, some more complicated. Yes, I am not up to speed on every detail, and Mr. Neumeier is right. He has obviously the institutional knowledge. He's been here for a number of years, and he's intimately familiar with these issues. I can assure you that, getting up to speed on things that I am not familiar with would not be something that I would just charge to the city. I recognize the fact that there's going to be a curve, learning curve, and that learning curve should not be paid for by the client. So when I do work for the city that is current and ongoing, I will obviously bill it. But for me to sit down and analyze what happened before just to get myself up to speed, that is not going to be something that I'm going to bill the city for. I will give you a small anecdote just so you have a sense of some differentials. I was assisting when we separated from AMLO and went to Ashrayamandir. I did some work for City of San Gabriel under my partner Keith, who's the city attorney. And one day Keith calls me and he says, listen, are you getting all the work done? And I went, is somebody complaining? Is there an issue? He says, no, but, you know, it's like, we're billing half the time that we were billing before. And I said, well, call and find out if there are problems. The work was getting done twice as fast as it was by my predecessor. Having done this for a long time, I don't have to go research, do deep dives on things that I've done before and the things that I understand. So there would be the experience would be something that would assist me in getting up to speed faster and not at the cost of the city.
Have you ever worked for a city with a working harbor?
No, I have not.
Thank you.
Questions, Councilmember Barton?
Not right now.
No. Councilmember Landrum.
Bachelor number one. I'm a little confused with Mr. Neumeier switching tunes in July when you were proposing your rate increase. You spoke so highly of A&W and all along have told me how they're such a valuable firm and they're so, you know, they have so much experience, and I'm so I'm confused by the switch.
So I don't want to give any impression that A&W is not a good firm, and A&W is a great firm, and I've worked with them for quite a while, and it was my home, and now it's not. And the firm I'm going to has three times the attorneys. So when I talked about the specialists that are available at A&W, there's going to be more at the new firm, and that's just a fact. I think it's valuable for me as the city attorney, and I've been the city attorney here for 6 years, to have specialists to back me up when I'm doing work for the city, because I don't know everything, and I need to turn to those specialists. Both the firms have those specialists, but what I and Lana and Christy offer is the institutional knowledge and the experience of having worked with the city myself personally for 8 years. I'm not suggesting that A&W isn't a good firm. It's just that I won't be with them anymore, and neither will Lana, and neither will Christy, and we're the primary legal team.
Thank you, and congratulations again on your switch. I'm done with questions.
Comments?
I guess I'll start. So there's been some comments about not making any rash decisions before the new council comes in a nutshell. And I agree that we shouldn't make any rash decisions and that the new council should make the decision on having a more, you know, whether or not to go with a firm or to have an in-house, those sorts of things. But I know it sounds like what I'm about to say is that I want to support staying with Alshire and Winders. However, I am in support of staying with the representation that we have had. It's no secret, in the last time when we talked about keeping the firm, I already had mentioned that I think institutional knowledge is important as we go through so many transitions right now. We've had a lot of changes in staff. We've had changes, we'll be having changes in our upcoming council. And with that being said, I think it's important. It's been mentioned having continuity. It's nothing against the firm. I think the firm has been amazing, and I appreciate the representation we've had. I don't think that there's any losers here. I feel like everyone has been amazing, and that no matter which way we go, it would be a win. But I think that we would be in better hands to have the knowledge of the three attorneys that are now with this other firm. And I have some concerns about, you know, we have Attorney Early, who has, if I'm reading this correctly, and maybe if things have changed since then, he would be our assistant attorney, city attorney, I believe, based off of what I've read. And he has currently, I believe, six other jurisdictions that he works for. And, you know, just with that being said, and you have one other big one that you're working with as well. My concern is that with the amount of catch-up work that would have to be done, especially if the future council decides to not go with the firm, I just feel like that's a lot of catching up to do only to be let go, if that's the direction that council goes with. But so really at this point in time, I feel like the responsible thing to do as an outgoing council member is to leave you in the hands of the knowledgeable attorneys that we currently have who will be at this other firm, and then to let the new council make the decision moving forward as to whether you want to stay with them, if you want to go back to Alshire, you know, put it out for RFP, do the interviews, and I trust that you will make an amazing decision, whatever that is. So that's where I'm at right now.
Councilmember Edwards.
I've been saying for a while that I've been concerned with regard to transfer of information when we, you know, change councils, when we change staff members, the turnover that we've had over just the 2 years that I've been in office. It has concerned me greatly. That we don't have that, and that our institutional knowledge that we're relying on, removing our wonderful city clerk aside, resides with a contract attorney. And I make no bones about that. However, I also think that it would not be responsible for us to have to make multiple changes. And although it would seem like staying with A&W would make sense from that perspective, we still have, you know, attorneys that would have to get up to speed on the issues that face us. And we are, as I've said, a very unique community. We have lots of moving parts. And I feel more comfortable and confident knowing that we have somebody who knows all that. And I also feel that it should, a decision further down the road, should be made on behalf of the new council and with the new seated people. I personally would like to see that. And because we've had so much discussion amongst ourselves over the past 2 years and with the greater community with regard to having in-house, outhouse, or what to me has come to maybe looking at some sort of hybrid. And so while we are not sure about what that looks like, I just think it would be prudent to look at keeping continuity as well. And also
not dismissing looking at fiscal responsibility and all the things that are important when we come when it comes to having any sort of contract with another party. So I'm going to leave it at that for the moment.
Councilmember Barton.
I'm in agreement with both of my fellow council members. I think the way forward is to stick with the attorneys that we have because there is so much going on. I think that it's a it would serve us better to go ahead with the attorneys we have and then leave it to the new council to make their decision.
Councilmember Landrum.
I am going to disagree with my fellow councilwomen. I guess my first experience with the law firm that we're currently using is on the WRF subcommittee, and the mayor and I were both new to that subcommittee, and we were in our first meeting, and we're totally green, don't know, you know, this is our first subcommittee meeting, and I'll just never forget, it's a Zoom meeting, and on the screen, we had, you know, some staff, and then three attorneys present in that meeting, and that right there is probably indicative of why our bill is nearly $1 million a year, and I think it's irresponsible for the ratepayers and in the citizens of Morro Bay to continue on in that. We have an option right now, and the gentleman, I have to read it, and I don't see it here. Mr. K has just said that he is. It sounds like really efficient and in assimilating information and delivering it, and I'm interested in that. That's very appealing to me. You know, I think Mr. Neumeier is really like him, and I really hope the best for him. This is absolutely not personal whatsoever. I just think for the to be responsible to the residents of Morro Bay, I think it's prudent to stay in the current firm that we're in. I don't think the fear of institutional knowledge, this is the institution. I mean, they are the institution. He just happens to be going to a firm that could switch us over. If he wasn't, we would be in not, you know, what would you do then? I have confidence that, you know, staying with the current firm and while we take on a new council and we can make that next step decision at that point. But I don't see why we would need to, you know, switch with someone that just actually had our rates raised and now is leaving us. You know, the whole thing is, to me, is really about money. And I think it's in the best interest of Morro Bay to stay with the current firm.
Thank you. I'm disappointed to hear the comments that we need to let the next council who's taking seat in less than 30 days make the decision, but that some of my fellow council members here are making that decision by changing contracts. So theoretically, you're going to take away the contract we have existing with a firm that we've used for 10 years that we had different attorneys with. And 6 months ago, we lobbied the three of you to go out for an RFP, and you refused it because of the institutional knowledge that Mr. Neumeier had, although at the same time acknowledging that if he left or somebody else was replaced, just like when Mr. Pannone was here, that all shifts. And then there was the comment that, yeah, we should go out for an RFP, but we can do that later. Well, later is now. And the idea of leaving a firm we already have a contract with, canceling that contract, starting a new contract with another firm, less than 30 days before a new council takes seat, because be guaranteed I will bring this item back. It's just going to cost the city money by doing all this transition when theoretically we may or may not stay with the firm that we have right now or switch to Mr. Neumeier. So I'm going to make the argument in opposition that staying with the firm we have until we decide if we want to move to Mr. Neumeier's is more fiscally prudent and more responsible. We're coming up to the holidays, so everything in government all but comes to a halt. The best, because of them pausing their contract, has come to a halt. That bill was $200,000 last year. If we don't, for legal services, if we don't stop now and evaluate that, how is this city and our responsibility as council members going to pay for that? We don't have those resources, so we have to step back and evaluate, why did it cost so much, $200,000? What do we get in return for it? You know, I agree with Council Member Landrum. You know, we're sitting on a conference call paying for three lawyers. It's all about billable hours, and that doesn't necessarily change with whatever firm you're with, but I would like to at least have this conversation with those who are going to be responsible for the next 4 years to the fiscal responsibility as well as the legal responsibility to our community. With all due respect to the two council members who, you know, are leaving, this feels like the last time we took office 2 years ago when a decision was made the last night that in the end we in some ways reversed, because it was just one of those things that was an important decision that was made by an outgoing council who doesn't bear the responsibility then. And it just doesn't seem right. I agree with the comment. It needs to be the people stepping in that have to answer to their constituents. I'm disappointed in the 10 days or less notice. I'm disappointed in the lobbying that Mr. Neumeier has done to each one of us individually, to offer this hybrid, to offer this, to offer that. You know, it's our decision, and we shouldn't be lobbied in a week's notice. We're really frustrated, really frustrated. And I hope that before we make this vote that you'll rethink that, staying with the firm that we're currently with, that we have a contract with, that's it, that is our city firm, regardless of who's representing us for the next 30 days, that we don't even have a council meeting, would be the holdover until the new council takes seat. So. And with that, I will ask for a motion. I'll make the motion and ask for a second. I move that we keep the current agreement with Alshire Windsor, thank you, for city attorney services, and request a new city attorney and assistant city attorney from A&W to start November 14th in 2 days, because that's how much notice we have. And I will ask for a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Discussion?
I'd like to ask for a substitute motion to approve the agreement with Burke, Williams, and Sorensen for city attorney services, and appoint current city attorney Chris Neumeier as city attorney, terminate agreement with Alshire and Winder for city attorney services with the exception of closure on ongoing items to be specified.
You're welcome to do that after my motion's complete and either passes or fails.
Am I not...
I have a motion on the floor with the second, and you're right. Welcome to comment, but you can't make a second motion.
It's a substitute motion. Can I ask for clarification? Is that allowed?
You asking me or the city clerk or?
Or whoever could answer that question. It's my understanding in Robert's Rule of Order that as I understand it, that we can ask for a substitute motion during discussion.
That is correct, under Robert's Rules of Order.
During discussion, not once there's a motion on the floor.
When a motion has been made and seconded, then there can be a motion to amend or, okay, or a substitute motion made, and then you have two motions on the floor.
But only if I get a second. If no one else seconds it, it's up, you know. Do I have a second?
For clarification, does she need a second? I've never been in this before. Does she need a second in order for more discussion to continue on both?
Yes.
Well, then I do want to second it so that we can continue some discussion, because I do have some questions.
Go ahead, discussion.
So one of the questions that I had is, I just want to know that I'm understanding this correctly, that from now, November 14th, 2024, the contract would continue if we went with BWS. It would go through the end of the year. And then is there, would we need or could we have a stipulation that once the year starts, that this is kind of like an on interim for a 6-month span, a 3-month span? Is that something that we can do, or is that not necessary because the original contract, I think, if I have this correct, you would be honoring the contract that's through June. So I'm just trying to see if I have that. Sorry, I just want to see if I have that correct.
So the contract's at will, so it could be terminated at any time. But you could also make it an interim contract for, you know, 6 months, 3 months, 9 months, you know, if you wanted to do that. It's up to the council.
But is that necessary to do is what I'm trying to figure out.
It's not necessary to terminate the contract because the contract can be terminated
at any point.
At any point.
Right. Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
I want to reiterate what the mayor said, that, you know, two of the council members that are in favor of keeping or switching now are leaving. And I just think that that is, such a significant move. And clearly the most continuity and the least, you know, I mean, the least jarring switching, you know, if you're concerned about staff time, switching two different firms within a month seems just like a waste of energy when we're going to have a new council that will most likely want to go out for RFP. It just seems like that is.
Can I respond?
Yep.
Okay. So I hear what you're saying, but I believe that I was elected to make decisions through my entire term, and I think that making decisions to the best of my knowledge and what I feel is best for the city. So to say, well, I'm just not going to make a decision because I won't be, a council member in less than 30 days, I don't think that's a fair statement. I feel I'm making the best decision by putting this forward for the city of Morro Bay because three of the people who are the most familiar with our city would still stay on just in a different firm. So I feel as though from my gut and from my experience and from input that I received from, I got texts, I got calls, I just feel like this is also, you know, input from our community. Mr. Heller, our former council member, has worked with those three as well. I think that with all of those things, I think that I am making a recommendation that would ease the new council instead of creating more issues. And I guess we could ask a clarifying question, or if that's okay, of, I don't know if it would be of Mr. Neumeier or of city staff, what kind of costs are we looking at to switch a firm? Like, what does this cost? A lot of hours? Is there a fee? Like, what is this monetary cost to switch the firm over? Do we know that? Do we have an idea? Because that was brought up, and I'm just, you know, just making sure if it's like this huge cost to switch over, then maybe that is something to consider in this discussion.
Yeah, I've not been made aware of a cost to transfer the contract or to sever the contract. The cost could be in personnel hours only, just the transition to the new team is my understanding, if attorney or city manager Kimball has further clarification.
And do we know what the do we have an idea of how many hours this is going to take of personnel to switch our firm? Is this
to switch over to Burke? It's, I think, not going to be really any extra cost to the city at all, because it's going to be basically myself, Lana Lehman, and Christy Lopez doing the primary work. I mean, the work will just continue, the work that we're doing right now. There's no meetings that need to happen between administrative staff at the new firm. I mean, there are no transition costs. I mean, basically, you have the same attorneys. It's just a different letterhead.
But, like, paperwork. That kind of stuff, like we're talking like accounting, you know what I mean, like the
there's a W-9 and that's about it really. I mean, you could ask the city clerk. I mean, she's, I guess the city clerk processes paperwork for if Dana has thoughts on that or
The city has used Burke William Sorensen in the past, so they are set up as a vendor in our system. It would be, you know, executing a new contract with them versus executing an amendment with Alsher Winder. From that standpoint, work in progress, I think, would be maybe from a staff perspective the biggest question. I don't know how we would know what that time spent might be to make a transition to a different attorney. I don't know how to quantify that necessarily.
So am I correct that there's no one currently here? Right now we have two attorneys from A&W. We don't have currently anyone from the other firm, representing the other firm.
There is not an attorney here tonight from the other firm, no.
Okay. So there's no representation from the firm that you're switching to here tonight?
No, they didn't send somebody here tonight.
That seems kind of telling as well.
Any other questions or comments? And I would just share, I respect your comments. But again, you're binding a future council to this decision that I will bring the item back. And nothing goes without a cost. No, and I'm not saying in 60 days or 6 months or whatever. So creating this staff work, because it is staff work, it's not just changing a contract. There's staff work and staff time involved in everything they do. So undoing a contract, doing a new contract, and then when a new council's seated, going out for an RFP or however we address it with the new council will be another action. So it all has a cost associated to it, just for clarification. It all has a cost associated. And to your comment about hearing from community members, thank you. Other than Mr. Heller, I heard from all the other people the total opposite. So we obviously are representing different people in the community, and that's fine. But, you know, this is, you know, a change of the council. So. Anything else? Otherwise, we're going to go for a vote on the motions because we have two more items tonight, and we seem that we're in an impasse here. So, so the first motion goes first.
The substitute motion goes first. It's the last motion made goes first. Perfect. Under Robert's rules.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor by Councilmember Ford, and I will ask for a roll call vote, please.
Aye.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Landrum?
No.
Mayor Wixom?
No.
Motion carries 3-2.
Before we move to the next item on regarding the battery energy storage, I'm going to have to recuse myself from this item. Right. I think that's the next one up, right?
Yep. 9B.
Okay.
Community Development Department discussion on potential battery energy storage systems urgency ordinance.
Yes. And just for transparency, my boss has worked on a bill in the past that is regarding safety and those types of things for battery energy storage systems. So I feel that it is best for me to walk away.
All right. Eric Lunsingwald, Community Development Director, and this item. All right, so this item is a discussion on a potential urgency ordinance for battery energy storage system projects. This is an item that was directed by City Council to come to a future date that was directed on August 27th this year. And there's a typo on this slide. So second bullet point. I was on a BESS webinar last month, and there was a representative, I believe, from the state emphasizing a state goal to increase battery energy storage capacity from the current level of 10,000 megawatts to 52,000 megawatts by 2045, not 2024. So I apologize for that typo. Again, direction was received on August 27th. And for context, Morro Bay Zoning Code currently does not specifically regulate BESS facilities. So how does an urgency ordinance work? So an urgency ordinance is a temporary pause initially for 45 days on a land use. It's required to have factual findings of an immediate threat to health, safety, or welfare. So typically it's a land use that's problematic where there is a imminent concern of public health, safety, and welfare if that use goes unregulated. An urgency ordinance may be extended another 22 months and 15 days, so 2 years total. That requires 4/5 a vote and noticing of the hearing for the extension. And the purpose of extending an urgency ordinance is to allow time for development of a permanent ordinance. I wanted to take a minute here to explain the difference between urgency ordinance and a moratorium. I think those terms often are used interchangeably, and they are different in important ways worth emphasizing. So an urgency ordinance, again in the term urgency ordinance, it implies that it needs to happen right away, very soon, to address some immediate threat to public health, safety, and welfare. It's temporary. It can, as I mentioned on the previous slide, be extended for a total period of 2 years. And again, going along with that sense of urgency, it doesn't require the typical hearing process. You don't have to take it to Planning Commission. It doesn't require the typical City Council hearing. And it wouldn't require Coastal Commission hearing the same way that a typical ordinance amendment would. So normally with an ordinance amendment, staff will prepare a draft ordinance, we'll release it for public review, we'll maybe incorporate changes based on public comment, then we'll present it to Planning Commission, Planning Commission will review it, and they'll make a recommendation to City Council. City Council will make the final city decision, then it'll be forwarded on to Coastal Commission for certification. With an urgency ordinance, it's just a moratorium that can be enacted without going through that hearing process. Without going through that, there is a hearing on the urgency ordinance, but not that typical ordinance process. Versus a moratorium, which would be permanent, and that requires the regular Planning Commission, City Council, and Coastal Commission approval process. And there's, I think, a question about whether or not Coastal Commission approval would necessarily be required for a moratorium. And we can discuss that later. City Attorney may want to weigh in on it. So I wanted to explain, I think, to set some important context here, you know, what would the current process be if we had a BESS application proposed tomorrow without an urgency ordinance, without any type of BESS regulations? How would that be treated by the current zoning code? So currently in our zoning code, there's no use classification for a BESS, and there's no development standards for a BESS. So it's really not, that use isn't recognized by our zoning code currently, and that's not a surprise. Even though our zoning code is fairly recent, BESS facilities is an emerging technology, and many jurisdictions don't have regulations to address BESSs in their zoning code. So the way our code is set up, since it's not listed as a defined use and there are no development standards for a BESS, the Community Development Department would need to either identify a substantially similar land use that is classified in the zoning code, or determine that there is no substantially similar land use, in which case that use would not be allowed. Also, of course, any applicant, and I mean this essentially was the case with Vistra, any applicant can apply for an LCP amendment to allow for a BESS. So again, thinking of an urgency ordinance as a temporary pause extended for up to 2 years to allow the city to adopt a permanent ordinance, there's two main options for that permanent ordinance laid out in your staff report and this slide. Option one is a permanent moratorium. And in the staff report, I outlined some pros and cons for each of these options. I think, you know, one pro for a permanent moratorium as the long-term option is it would be a clear prohibition within city limits on any future BESS applications. And I think the flip side, you know, to that is it would leave a company interested in developing a BESS in the city no other option than to go through the AB 205 opt-in certification program. Versus option two would be to use that 2-year time frame during an urgency ordinance to adopt a permanent BESS ordinance. And the advantage of that is it would allow the city to develop, you know, standards to address health and safety concerns, limit the zoning districts where a BESS could be located, maybe establish very clear application content requirements for safety studies, incorporating, you know, the latest and best technology to address any safety concerns. And that would allow an alternate path to AB 205 opt-in certification to a BESS developer. They still could decide to go through the state, but at least it would provide a path through the city, whereas option one, this permanent moratorium, would leave a company no other option than to go to the state through CEC if they were really intended on developing a BESS within the city limits. So staff recommends that council receive and file this report and provide staff direction on an urgency ordinance. And again, thinking of the urgency ordinance as that temporary pause to provide time for a permanent ordinance, we'd welcome direction from from the council this evening on which option you would want to pursue as the permanent ordinance along with an urgency ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Questions from council? Councilmember Landrum.
So, and how long will it take to get to these, for staff to, you know, recommend on these things? The permanent BESS ordinance or the moratorium? How long do you think the processes would take, the two different options?
So again, the time frame that the urgency ordinance would be in effect would be a maximum of 2 years, assuming it's extended with 4/5 vote. So that would be the target time frame to develop that permanent ordinance, so there isn't a lapse in regulations.
Okay, and then if that's with, that's where you're allowing a site somewhere in your city, right? The permanent BESS ordinance?
So again,
Or did you just say moratorium?
So a permanent moratorium.
Permanent moratorium.
Again, that would go through, that wouldn't be an urgency ordinance. So an urgency ordinance would be kind of the short-term stopgap if the, you know, say council directed that option one for a permanent moratorium. That theoretically would be quicker to develop. We wouldn't have to come up with a list of detailed regulations for siting the BESS in the city. I think we would want to work closely with city attorney on making sure we're documenting and substantiating the findings for why a permanent moratorium is necessary. But it wouldn't involve as much staff time as developing ordinance standards for future BESS applications.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Questions, Councilmember Barton?
No.
Questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I think this is an important conversation to be had. I remember when this came forward at a public comment, and I feel that it is important that we have this discussion with regard to the fact that we don't have anything within our codes for standards and or guidelines to a project of this nature. And and on top of that, we have projects like this going in all over California. So I do think it is important discussion to have and not set aside. I think, though, one of my questions is that we've only had one of these projects come to us for permitting process, and that current project has been paused, and in the idea that they will more than likely exercise AB 205 and go to the CEC for their project. And so I'm looking at this in thinking in terms of urgency, and maybe I'll actually set that aside. I'm looking at that in terms of what's happened with the current one that's been in process with us, and saying that that almost like set a precedent. So if we already have the one that was with us going to the CEC, presumably, and you have other ones, in California doing the same, there's already been a precedence to be set that why would you go to, the city, the local municipality for permitting process when you can just go and exercise AB 205? So that has me concerned because that's been set. So I guess my question is in terms of the urgency, looking at the project that we've had before us, would having staff put in time to work on either a moratorium or an ordinance to that length, would that have any effect on the current project on the Vistra site? Would that have any effect on that? Meaning,
It would not, and it would apply to future BESS applications. It would have no effect on the Vistra application.
Right, and to my point, that one's already set a precedent. So why? I guess my question is working toward the urgency aspect of this. I'm just not seeing the justification for the urgency aspect of this because of where we are right now with having one be in the process and then them pausing and wanting to go to the CEC. So I'm just wondering that if somebody else was to come in right now, and I don't know where they'd be putting it, but say on another area, having this moratorium, I just am not seeing how somebody would do that. I'm trying to figure out the reality here is that if they would do that. And so that's why I'm trying to understand the urgency aspect of this as opposed to that being different from having this discussion and understanding that it would be good for us to have guidelines and standards with regards to these types of projects. And not having that, I could absolutely see the importance of working on that. But I'm just kind of getting stuck on the urgency aspect. I'm hoping that you can help me.
Councilmember Barton.
I'll try as far as process. So as I was explaining in my presentation, so the Vistra application was unique compared to other type of BEST applications that could potentially be seen in the city, in that it was proposed on the power plant property. And the power plant property is, per the general plan, required to have a master plan for any development, and that requires an LCP amendment. And so through that LCP amendment, there was an ability to allow for a BEST. If that LCP were approved and went through the process, it would allow for a BEST as a use. If we were to receive a application for a BEST project somewhere else where there's no requirement for a master plan or no requirement for an LCP amendment, we would have to look in our zoning code and, you know, determine how do we treat this, because we don't have BEST as a listed use anywhere in our zoning code. And that's where we would have to go through this process of, is it substantially similar to something else in the zoning code, or are we just saying there's nothing like a BEST recognized in our zoning code, so it's prohibited anyways? So if that were the route, the moratorium wouldn't be necessary. It could just be determined that there is no substantially similar use. I can't see right now what that process, how that process would turn out without actually having an application on a specific site, but that's what we would have to do. If it turns out that it is substantially similar to some other use in the zoning code, I think there's a use called like public works and utilities. That use is currently allowed in a residential zoning district. It's allowed in commercial, it's allowed in industrial. And we don't have any standards to address a BEST, because those public works and utility standards in the zoning code aren't really designed for a BEST project. Whereas through a permanent BEST ordinance, it could be tailored to address some of the specific safety concerns for that type of land use.
Yeah, thank you for that. And so I guess, I read about that exact piece of the public works utility code that you're speaking of, and it doesn't, you know, it's not enough. I mean, to be able to, I think, say that this kind of project is the same as putting in, I don't know, utility lines. So again, I say I do feel we should be working toward having standards and guidelines. And clearly, when projects like these are, potentially being state imposed on us, even more so, it would make sense to me to have these things so that we have a clearer understanding of how to handle them in the future, wherever they may be proposed in our sphere of influence. I think also where my thinking is right now we've been dealing with one of them, and it's been a very controversial one. We've had a measure on the ballot. I'm just kind of looking at, maybe this is cart before the horse. I'm just concerned that we're not using staff's time to focus on reflecting on what we've learned and with what's happened with the current project with Vistra, and trying to figure out, you know, what is going to be, our direction now with regard to that project.
Point of order. Are we commenting now, or are these questions?
I'm just kind of relating it. So I can say this if you like. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine, Zara. I was making a point, but that's
okay. Any more questions?
No.
Any more questions from council?
I have one. Mr. Singwald, have you had any more interest in having battery storage facilities in Morbay or in the sphere of influence?
So in my time as community development director, I have not had any other BEST companies contact me about establishing a BEST in the city limits.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions? Public comment is open on this item.
Most
important things for the city, City of Morro Bay. My name is Betty Winholtz. We did an emergency ordinance when I was on city council for housing and sizes, that we were getting McMansions, and we didn't want that to happen, and we wanted that to be reflected through the Planning Commission and the public. And in order to do that, we did an emergency ordinance for 45 days and then kicked it down the road for almost 2 years, knowing that we weren't going to do anything immediately about it. So for me, I would see an emergency ordinance to keep these things out of the neighborhood when someone knocks on the door tomorrow and says, I want to put one in, you know, up at 3300 Panorama, that it would be fairly easy, I think, in light of what I read as the emergency ordinance we did back in the day, to just write that and say, we're good for now. That kicks it to the new council. You got 45 days to decide what you want to do with the new council. Do you want an emergency or not? So it seems to me it would behoove this council, if you're going to respect the community, that you would pass this tonight, and it would need to be 4-0.
Anyone else for public comment on this item? AGP, are there any raised hands?
No, Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Comments? Councilmember Landrum.
I'm leaning towards the urgency ordinance or the moratorium. Like, I think that those are, we should stop while we can assess the situation. And I like the two-year option, which was, that was the moratorium? That was the urgency ordinance.
Yes. Yes, initially, excuse me, 45 days, then it can be extended to up to 2 years total.
Okay.
So to be clear, urgency ordinance would stop any applications from coming in to give the city time to study whether it wants to do a permanent moratorium or to regulate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but it would stop everything at that moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the option we should go with.
Councilmember Barton, comments?
I agree with that same thought process.
Thank you. Councilmember Edwards, comments?
Yeah, again, like I said, I was just trying to understand the sense of urgency here, and I appreciate public comment as well as the comments by my colleagues. I did want to just put in that I'm hopeful that we will continue, because staff does need to still reflect upon the current project and how it's moving forward and what our plans are. And so I was just merely looking at the just where time is being spent, because it was mentioned in the report. So I am actually, as far as if we are going to do the moratorium, I think that if I'm understanding that correctly, it's the 45 days, and then the new council would be seated, of course, to take a look at this, because I am really feeling that this is something that the new council should definitely be able to discuss. But I would be comfortable with the moratorium, with how it's been presented.
I think the 45 days is the urgency ordinance, not the moratorium.
I meant the urgency.
Thank
ordinance.
You.
Sorry
okay.
about that.
Yeah, I think it's important that our community takes a stance in light of, you know, how we've seen the whole process with the best application and the pause to for their consideration of going to use AB 205. You know, AB 205 has a sunset clause, as we had this conversation earlier tonight, and you can't just invoke AB 205 without paying for the applications and things. So it's going to have to be somebody who wants to put in a project at that point that probably is something we would really question in our neighborhoods. Certainly, mm-hmm. I think that we need to take an action. None of us want to see this next to our home. And again, this goes back to not opposing battery storage or renewable opportunities and options. I think our community is certainly on board in the renewables, but it's about location, location, location. So with that, I'll ask for a motion. If somebody wants to bring the motion for an urgency ordinance.
I move that we pass an urgency ordinance for any new BESS projects.
So if I'm sorry. So we don't have an urgency ordinance before the council to adopt this evening. Staff would need to go back, develop an urgency ordinance, and prepare, again, findings satisfying the requirements of the government code that there's an immediate threat to public health, safety, and welfare, and have to return to a future council meeting with that ordinance and findings.
Then I move that we have...
So you want to amend your motion?
I'll amend my motion to have staff... draft an emergency ordinance for battery energy storage systems.
To begin findings and...
Yeah.
Is that going to be satisfactory?
Yes.
Thank you. And I'll second that. I'll do a voice vote, please. Roll call vote. I'm sorry. Roll call vote. Thank you.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
And moving on to our last item.
Mayor, if I could ask, when would the council want the urgency ordinance to come back? Would you want it in January or at the December meeting?
No, January.
Okay. All right.
I think Mr. Singwall will need time to do the findings and things. Thank you. With everything else on your plate. Thank you. Okay. Down to our last item, and I just lost my agenda. On my computer. Oh my gosh. Help me out here. Literally just lost it off my computer. Oh, thank you.
You don't look on.
Thank you.
Keep it.
Moving on, Mr. Singwall, General Plan Annual Progress Report 2023. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, so the PowerPoint is getting pulled up right now, but I can maybe start talking on this item. So under state law, all cities and counties are required to adopt and implement a general plan. And in addition, law requires that we present a general plan progress report to the legislative body, in this case, the city council, for consideration and acceptance. And then once the progress report is accepted by the City Council, we forward it on to the State Housing and Community Development Department where it's filed. The time period for this progress report is last calendar year, so calendar year 2023. And I mentioned all of this as we were pulling up the PowerPoint, just background. So I wanted to provide some building permit data because, of course, as we issue building permits for new development within the city, that is implementation on the ground of our general plan.
Mr. Singwall, can you pause for just 1 minute? We need to get Council Member Ford back. I'm sorry. My apologies. There she is. Never mind. She's back. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
PowerPoint.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Singwald.
All right, so I was just going to go over some building permit stats for calendar year 2023, and then just it's another point of comparison, compare how those numbers look compared to this year. So in 2023, so 199 residential building permits were issued, and 21 commercial permits. Then if you compare that to the first half of 2024, 82 residential permits and 13 commercial. So you can see build permit activity is a little bit below the previous year. So highlighting some of the implementation efforts that occurred in 2023, and full disclosure, I wasn't here in 2023, but my staff helped me kind of go through some historic files to see what key ordinance amendments were completed and implementation measures were completed in calendar year 2023. So the zoning code amendments were adopted in December 2023. Also the 2022 building code amendments were adopted also December 2023. And 2023, we initiated the research that ultimately went into the Waterfront Master Plan Local Coastal Program Planning Grant. So yeah, that's an exciting opportunity. I also want to use this presentation just to, although this isn't the reporting period of last year's General Plan Progress Report, I wanted to kind of highlight major projects that are currently in progress as we actively implement and update the general plan. So Waterfront Master Plan update is very close to being underway. We're finalizing the agreement for the grant with Coastal Commission staff right now. The next major step that the council will be involved in is actually forming the Waterfront Master Plan Advisory Committee. So similar to the General Plan Update Advisory Committee, we are going to form an advisory committee for Waterfront Master Plan update and bring that to work with the council to identify the members of that advisory committee. And then we plan to issue the request for proposals in January of next year. Downtown Design District, so we are scheduling a public forum held at a planning commission meeting, tentatively scheduled for December. We don't have an exact date determined for that yet. Also, historic preservation ordinance, that's something that's been on the department's work program for some time. I know it's one of the council's short-term citywide goals, so that is in our work program to begin next year. The Planning Commission has requested a discussion on public benefits and an example of public benefits that have been provided for other projects within the waterfront area in the past. So we are working on a public benefits memo to present to Planning Commission, as the council's aware. In addition, working with the county and a consultant they've hired for an offshore wind operation and maintenance infrastructure study and best project research. And now that includes developing an emergency ordinance that we'll bring back in January. Per the last item. As far as major current planning projects, so these are development review projects in progress. There's the 3300 Panorama Drive 46 lot subdivision. We're currently in the notice of preparation public comment period that actually closes this Friday, November 15th. And once we have all of the comment letters from public and various agencies, the EIR consultant can formally kick off preparation of the draft EIR for that project. As we've discussed, the Vistra BEST project is currently on pause, and Vistra has indicated that they plan to go to CEC for approval under the opt-in certification program. And while that won't be a city application, that'll be a significant department and staff commitment to engage in that AB 205 process. Seashell Estate, so that's a relatively larger project. I think I've presented to the council before that they have changed their proposal. Before it was a zoning code amendment to increase density. Now they're incorporating and plan for 30 units, so 10 single-family residences, 10 ADUs, and 10 JADUs that would be allowed with the current zoning. And we're tentatively looking at planning commission hearings in December or January for that project. Bayside Landing, conditional use permit down on southern end of the Embarcadero. So there's a planning commission hearing on that project last month, and it has been continued to next week. Then also Gray's Inn too, so expanding the Gray's Inn to the adjacent lease site. That conditional use permit has gone to planning commission for conceptual review, and we're currently working with the planning commission subcommittee to address some planning commission comments on that, and then eventually bring that to planning commission for hearing. And another larger project in progress is at 545 Atascadero Road. It's a conditional use permit for 16 new townhomes. So that concludes staff's presentation. The recommendation is to review and accept the general plan progress report.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Questions from council? Councilmember Barton, questions?
Not necessarily a question, but a comment. I'm just...
We'll get to that in a minute. Hang on.
Okay.
Questions? Okay. Comment?
Oh,
hang on. We're going to open public comment. Public comment is open on this item. AGP, is there any raised hands in the queue?
No, Madam Mayor, no hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Sorry about that, you guys. All right. Councilmember Barton, comments?
I was just writing as we were going along here, this, and I'm impressed with how much is happening in so many different parts of the city and the quantity of housing that's involved. So that's big changes.
Thank you. Councilmember Landrum, comments? Councilmember Ford, comments? Edwards, Councilmember, comment?
Again, I'm with Councilmember Barton. It's always just incredible when I see these things just lined up, the amount of things we have in progress. So I just want to give kudos to staff and thank you for this report, Mr. Singwald.
Yes, thank you for the update. I think it helps us just to know where we're at because not everybody's aware of some of these projects. The controversial ones always get the attention with the Panorama and Best and those things, but we do have other projects in the queue that are coming forward as far as housing opportunities. And I hope that one on Atascadero Road, which is by all the other townhouses and things, will move forward because that'll help us with some housing options. So thank you for the update, and we will receive and file that. Future council agenda items, anybody? Anybody? My left to my right. Reminder that the Thanksgiving dinner information is shared on the city website, and you can contact the senior citizens, our department. Thank you again, Ms. Winters, for bringing that to us. I'm sorry we forgot it. Very important community dinner. And our next meeting will be December 10th at 4 p.m., 4 to 5, and then we will adjourn and have a business meeting at 5:30. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.